Welcome, listeners, to time for an awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people will turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing, therefore get wisdom. With all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your host, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream at that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and catch the live stream there. Also, you can go to bbitumi.com. That's abibitumi.com/timeforanawakening. Catch the live stream there. Or you can download the TuneIn Radio app to any of your devices. TuneIn is a free app. In that TuneIn Radio app, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you had the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily by myself or Brother Richard. And do me a favor before you leave that page, just hit that like button. It's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for an Awakening media is also there. Always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening media, interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, and share with your friends. Also, check out that Time for an Awakening marketplace and our partnership with the BB Toomey. Always interesting things in the marketplace all the time. Various African language classes, classes on education, economics, social systems, health, and much, much more being taught by professors on both the continent and in the diaspora. So, again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, we have a full program scheduled for this evening. Our first guest will be Vice Mayor of Mason, Tennessee, Ms. Virginia Rivers, also activist organizer and Mason Community Task Force member, Michael Harris. Both will tell us about the fight to protect the majority black town of Mason, from hostile takeover by the state. It'll be an interesting discussion with our first guest. In the second portion of our program, activist organizer and director of the Black Autonomy Network of Community Organizations, Banco Reverend Edward Pinckney will be joining us. Reverend Pinckney will give us an update on what's going on Benton Harbor. Reverend Pinckney was with us about 3 months ago and talked about the situation there. We'll get some current updates and current information when Reverend Pinckney joins us in the second portion of the program. But we'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Not a Wu-Tanger. All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m., for podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 7:12 here in the city of Philadelphia on this Sunday edition of Time for an Awakening. Before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum, here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. You know, hey, Elliot, I'm looking forward to our conversation, even though it may seem, I'm looking forward to it because in both cases, we're looking at Black people building the community, right? Taking power in their own hands. And we get to see in live the pushback for doing that, you know, I think because a lot of times when we deal with it from history, it seems like something that's happening in the past, but here we can give examples and probably get lessons of how we have to deal with this ongoing dichotomy of trying to be American citizens in a hostile environment.
You know, I think this will be an interesting conversation with the both the first and second portion of our program this evening, because it takes organization to be able to mount an effort to push back, Richard. We've talked about this on several occasions. One of the main things, it takes organization. It takes the people to get together and mount an effort to fight. Tonight, our first guest, Vice Mayor of Mason, Tennessee, Ms. Virginia Rivers, and activist, organizer, and Mason Community Task Force member, Mr. Michael Harris, is scheduled to join us. I don't know whether Michael is with us yet, but we do have Vice Mayor Rivers with us this evening. Ms. Rivers, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing great. Glad to have you on Time for an Awakening with myself and Brother Richard.
Yeah, how you doing, Vice Mayor?
I'm fine, sir. How are you?
Great.
Ms. Rivers, I've read the published report on what's going on down in Mason. I kind of did a little cursory background. I talked to one of our listeners down in the area, Brother Marcus over there in Memphis, and he put me in touch with you and also Mr. Harris. I don't know whether Mr. Harris is on the line with us. Mr. Harris, are you there?
He just texted me and told me that he can't get on.
Okay.
He having a problem.
Okay. Well, hopefully he'll be able to log on with us.
Yes, sir.
But I want you to kind of give our listening audience some details, and then me and Richard are going to fill in with some questions to ask you in reference to what exactly is going on down there in Mason. We see that the state wants to take control of basically the town, their finances, want you to tear up your charter, and come in line because a Ford electric car plant is going to be built at less than 5 miles, if I'm not mistaken, from Mason. Talk about what has happened and what is currently going on in Mason.
Well, what has happened is on February the 8th, and I will try to sum this up as quickly as possible.
No, take as much time as you need.
Well, on February the 8th of this year, Manpower had called a meeting on that day, and we didn't know what to expect because he told us there would not be an agenda, as well as when the mayor asked him what was it concerning, he said that it would have to do, we were just going to have a conversation, just talk about Mason. Well, anyway, at the meeting on February the 8th, we all was blindsided. We weren't expecting what happened. And what happened was he came in and gave, Jason Munpower came in and gave us an ultimatum and or demand that we had two choices. We give up our charter or they would come in and take over the finances of the town. And he told us we were the worst city in the state and we were so bad, you know, and that's basically to sum that conversation up. But in the midst of it, I stood and told him that I will fight for our charter and I will fight for the citizen of Mason. And that's what I've tried to do so far. From that point, that day, we didn't hear anything back from the comptroller's office or Mr. Munpower until the mayor had a letter sent from the office on his behalf and mine to the comptroller asking them to have a meeting. Well, the same day the letter was sent, Jason Munpower called me and said that he would have a meeting, but it would not change anything that was already in motion. Everything would remain the same. Nothing would change because of the meeting. We had the meeting, and when we went to the meeting, it was our attorney, the Hueys, who is our finance consultant, Ms. Reba Marshall, who is our CMFO, she was on the internet, and along with myself. The Hueys presented the numbers to try to show them that the amount that they had put out there, the $597,000, was not what Mason owed. And our purpose was trying to show them that down through the years, we had been paying on that balance all along. And the balance was $480-some. That's what we showed him that day when we went there. We also let them know that at, during that same day, that the board and the mayor and aldermen had voted to use our ARP money, which was $227,000, toward paying off the debt. I must let you know this debt that we are paying off is not something that we incurred or something we done wrong. It's a debt that was done about over 18 years ago. Mason has been having issue, which came out of Manpower's mouth, to over 20 years. So with that being said, over 8 years or 10 years ago, the people that was running the office at that, the town at that time was white. They had went down with money, almost $1 million from Mason. It was stolen. One guy admitted that the $600,000 was paid, that he had paid himself. There were three white people and one black. The two of the white, well, one of them took his life. The other one had never went to trial, never was questioned or anything about the money that she had taken. However, the man that admitted to the $600,000 was allowed to go free and not pay Mason their money back. So the debt that I'm in speaking in question of now is the debt from is money paid they took from the town that we were trying to make right. When we came into the office in 2016, the office, it was a mess. The audits was back, I think, late. They hadn't turned audits in, I believe it was back in 29, 28, something like that. 2008, something like that. Anyway, it was four or five audits behind when we took over in 2016. With that being said, you had to catch up those audits that was behind before you could even begin in the year that you were there. So there, the audit was just a mess. You couldn't even find anything. You had to hunt for the paperwork. You had to try to find out what was what. It was you couldn't even track anything. So that what made it also made it hard. Moving forward to where we are with the $227,000 of our ARP money that we used toward that $485,000. We told them that's what we were going to use to help pay off the debt. We had already agreed to it before the comptroller even decided to come in. There was already something the town had decided. With that being said, would have left us with around $250,000. All this was presented that day at the meeting. The only thing I can say is that the comptrollers, Mr. Munpower and them, was willing to at least listen to what we had to say. When we, Mr. Jason Munpower said, well, what I'll do is I'll send our office down that Friday. And if the numbers match, if everything matches, we will rewrite the demands that we have sent. We may even lower the amount, which the amount at that time was $22,124 that they wanted us to pay a month up front before we pay any bills, which also the demand was is that we couldn't even pay any bills that was over $100 without their permission. We couldn't even apply for grants without their permission. So with that being said, they came down, they looked at the numbers. The guys that came said the numbers look good, everything verified. They went back. Well, then later, they sent out another letter of demand, which the only thing changed in that demand was they lowered it from $22,000 to $9,500 to be paid. But still, this had to be paid up front before we could pay any other bills. Nothing else changed in that order. Nothing. We still had to contact them if we wanted to pay our bills that was over $100. We couldn't apply for grants that still made and remain in effect, and that on April 4th, they would come in and take control of our finances. With that being said, we are at the point where we only owe $250-some-odd dollars. Now, you got a town that has struggled from over almost $1 million down to $250-some-thousand, and you want to take over their town. You even want to tell the media that they're ill capable of handling the finances of the town. Also, during the meeting on February the 8th, Mr. Munpow made it plain and clear to us that he had had a meeting with Jeff Huffman, who is the county mayor, who he wants us to give up our charter. So the county mayor, Jeff Huffman, who is a Republican, can come in and take over Mason. Mason would no longer be Mason. We would go into the county. We'd be in the county. And we'll be under their thumb. But because we refused that, then they did what they say. They come in and took over and make it hard for us. If what they have laid out for us to do, we ask the question, what if there's an emergency? We still have to contact them, if it's an emergency, to get clearance from them before we get even emergency. God forbid anything happen. You gotta call them, whether it's weekend, midnight, whatever, and call them to ask or let them know this has happened. Can we go ahead and do this? That is, first of all, you are stressing the mayor and the board of officials. You're causing us not be able to handle the affairs of the town as they come. Only that, we can't even respond to our constituents with that is crazy. And it's like coming in and telling us that since you won't give up the charter, we're going to make it hard anyway. We're going to fix this. We're going to make sure. And with this being done, keep it in mind, Mason is not behind fault of any bills. We don't owe anybody. We're not behind on anything. The only debt we had, we've been paying. We also paying, I think it was in November, to the comptroller, which they never responded or gave us a yay or a nay as to accepting it. When we heard anything, as I stated, was February the 8th. With that being said, now here we are. Going to court. We went to court on Wednesday. We went to court, and our attorney Clay, along with his associate, attorney Van Turner from the NAACP, represented Mason, and they represented us real well. So as of now, we are waiting for the 15th of this month to hear the judge's decision as to what she would do. They filed for a temporary injunction to stop them from taking over the town.
I think we have Mr. Harris that joined us. Mr. Harris, are you there?
Yes, sir. Yes, I'm on. Thank you.
Good.
Yes.
And I think we got a little interference in your background. You might have volume or something up. Maybe you can turn that down.
Yes, I'm taking care of that now.
Good. Vice Mayor Rivers, the fellow you was referring to, this Munpow, he's the state controller.
Yes, sir. He is.
Okay. A couple of things that's going on here that I want you to really bring out for the listening audience. It's a Ford electric car plant that's going to be built near Mason, if I'm not mistaken,
correct.
Less than 5 miles away, which will mean a economic boost, more than an economic boost, for the majority black city or town of Mason. Need to come in to take control of the city's finances and to get you to tear up your charter. You just expressed that the town was basically under white leadership up until 2016. And the finances of the town, I guess the tax revenue and all, had been stolen. And one person admitted to the theft, according to what you have stated. But since you and other leadership have been in since 2016, you've been kind of cleaning up the mess left behind by other folks. I'm quite sure the state has realized this, because from what you stated, they knew that the people had stolen money from the town's coffers. So what is really it's clear to me what you really believe this is about. But talk about the plant that's coming in and what that could mean to the residents of Mason.
With the Ford electric plant coming in, which is referred to as the Blue Oval, which is approximately 4.5 miles from Mason, that with that plant coming and the money that is going to flow through, Mason will benefit tremendously from that plant being there. It began to grow, to prosper. Hopefully we will get our infrastructure, our town moving. People would, and not only that, people would be able to get jobs. They are going to even have a training plant there where they would train people, even people coming out of the kids that are coming out of school. They can go to this training and make what I think it's something like, it's up in the over 50 some thousand dollars or more a year. I don't remember the exact cost, price, but nevertheless, they'll be able, Mason can prosper. People can begin to have better jobs, better opportunities. Hopefully we'll be able to see our community grow for its gas station, schools, having community centers, grocery stores. These are the things that we're hoping that we will be able to have or to progress within the time frame that we would be able to with this plant coming. But with them doing what they are doing, the real reason why they want us to give up the charter, let me say this too, is that Jeff Huffman, who they want to take over our county, our city, has bought over 500, if not more, acres of land between us and the Blue Oval. And my understanding, he's also has purchased land on the other side of Mason. I'm saying that to say this. He wanted to build a waterway system and got denied. Now, if you got land on one side of Mason and land on the other side, you can't do nothing with that land without a waterway. Mason owned their own waterway system. So if you were denied to be a one, you feel like, okay, just go in there and tell those people that to give up their charter, and then try to make the people, the citizens, feel like their leaders are incapable of handling the town's affairs. He did that also, Munfauer did, by sending a letter to our constituents, encouraging them to tell your leaders to give up the charter. They were after the charter so he could take control of our utilities. He could come in and tell us what not to do and when to do it.
Mr. Harris, I want you to jump in this conversation, because when we talked on Friday, you talked about, and I'm still getting that little interference, so if you can turn your other volume down, that would be great, because it's feeding back some.
Okay.
When we
how about that?
Say that again, I'm sorry.
How's that? Is it better?
That sounds good. I don't hear the feedback. When we talked on Friday, you talked about this controller, Munpow, that came to Mason, came to the church in Mason. Sat on the communion table that you told me. And mentioned to the people that you can keep your address, you can keep your holiday parade, but you're going to give up that charter. Talk about the demands, you know, how this was presented to the residents of the town with total disrespect. Just weigh in on this. And then I want to kind of get to the organization behind trying to fight, because you're involved, a member of the community task force in Mason. So talk about when it was presented to the residents there at the church.
Mr. Booker, that was an experience that no one ever would want to ever encounter again. The controller, when he came in, he just had lunch with Mr. Huffman, just like Mrs. Rivers said. And they just had lunch, and he came in and sit. And when the meeting started, they started. Other words, he started right away pounding on Mason about the shape that Mason was in, had been in trouble for a number of years, and he stressed the fact everything that if they did not get their business and everything in order, then the plant that's coming in, the Ford plant, which is another word to call the blew over. If it, when they come in, they would Mason could very easily be bypassed and not even get not have that chance to benefit from it. So he went right on to hammer it on the officers, which is the mayor, alderman, board, what have you. And he quickly stated that if we did not, in other words, he was giving Mason a couple of options, just like the vice mayor just mentioned, a couple of options. And those options were just only say it's either surrender your charter, or we will have to take it. And that's when it got very fierce in there. Mr. Monpower, which is the controller, as he sit on the table, the communion table, which was a total disrespect, he went right on, like again, and moved forward and saying that's what he's going to do. Well, he was looking out towards the audience. He was asking several questions to the alderman board and what have you in regards to the finances and what have you. He mentioned that Mason had pays the highest taxes in the county, by all means. And so that wasn't true. He went on to say everything that the it would be better, of course, if they gave the charter and then you keep that the citizen could keep their address, and also if they decide they wanted to have a Christmas parade or so, they can have that everything. But just be happy and you can have that and then you go on. Well, he just mentioned that he had left lunch with the county mayor, the county executive, if you will. He just mentioned that he had just left lunch with him, but the county mayor did not come to the meeting, and the lunch was just only, I would say, a couple of hundred yards from where the church where we had the meeting was. So it was a very it was hard to see exactly how he came across. And we could see, like the vice mayor just mentioned, we could see the county mayor in the midst of all that his conversation. We could see that, what have you. And so But that's when Miss Rivers vice mayor got up and made a stand and she made a strong stand. We are very proud of her for what she did. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry. Yes.
Oh no, I'm just also excited about that.
Yes. And so the controller himself, or that he did not call the meeting to a close. He walked out. In other words, he made his point, and he walked out. And as he was walking out, some of the constituents, citizens that was there at the meeting, asked the question, "What happens after this?" He said, "Well, we're going to make a decision very soon." And it will be soon. He didn't say, but and that's where the next meeting came about. And Vice Mayor can tell you better than anyone. Yes,
Richard. Before I pass things over to you, let me ask a question to both of you and Vice Mayor Rivers. The population of Mason is under 10,000. Now you have a city, Atoka. I think I'm expressing that right. Is it Atoka?
Yes.
That's near you, a town near you. Now, I just want to read off these demographics for the listening audience. According to statistics, Mason has a 38% poverty rate and a household income of 36.5. But this neighboring town of yours, Atoka, is 87% white, 9% black.
Okay.
With a 4% poverty rate and a $91,000 household income. So it's almost three times the amount. We can see what this is, the listening audience. Richard, jump in here and with some things for our guests.
Well, Mr. Booker, those stats are correct. In Tipton County, you have, like I said, Atoka, and right adjacent to that is Mumford, Tennessee, which is all these are in Tipton County, if you will. And you have another county called Brighton, Tennessee, and that's right. All these counties right next door to each other. Not that counties, but towns right next door to each other. As far as the poverty is concerned, or poverty rate and the household income, that's been that way for quite some time. A lot of the other areas in Tipton County, they get a little bit more support, and maybe because of the fact everything that the county and by being being white, they are no doubt will be able to keep, other words, stay plugged in to all the benefits and everything coming in. And then, too, each town has always, they get money from the state, of course, get funds from the state by grants and what have you. It's not a surprise to us. And matter of fact, Mr. Booker, and to the audience, it's not Tipton County was really concerned about Mason before the Ford plant came in. I mean, was preparing to come in. Only just because they see the benefit, because anytime a company to that magnitude come in, like the Ford plant or whatever, they are quite sure there's a lot of money that's going to be made. The quality of life in the area, which Mason or then it would change, like Vice Mayor just stated, that the quality of life would change tremendously for the citizens of Mason, the surrounding area. But the county as a whole on the Atoka end, They are a little further away from this from this Blue Oval or this the Ford plant.
Mm-hmm.
They are a little further away, so therefore they don't have. Other words, Mason Sentinel and Gold Mine, and that's where the state is looking at, and it's Sentinel and Gold Mine, and we determined that we're gonna fight very hard for that. And the vice mayor, she kept the door open. The point is now we just got to bring them to the table and make sure that they realize everything, that it's enough for everyone, and not to just we just accept the crumbs, what have you, but to make sure that we can have control, and I think the vice mayor is doing a wonderful job there.
Richard, jump in here.
And thank you. I did get excited, Vice Mayor Rivers, because a lot of times we don't get the feedback that political leadership is actually taking the kind of, affirmative position when it gets into, and I'm going to be very frank, when it gets into the position of dealing with white power and the shenanigans that's going on. So that brings me to the first question for a point of clarity. Did you say the county mayor purchased land?
Yes.
Is that what? Okay. That's and the other for my, I know you, both of you have mentioned it. I just wanted to, again, for a point of clarity, the county that Mason is in, is that county name is what again?
It's Tipton County.
Tipton County. Okay. And the other question now, how long has Mason had its charter?
150 some years, I think.
Wait a minute. We're saying that Mason has had its charter for over 150 years, and all of a sudden they just want to take the charter away. Am I hearing this right?
You're hearing it exactly right.
Elliot, do that make sense? And wait, I got to do this. And you hear me, you know, because it's one of those things where a lot of times we don't really understand the power dynamics, like especially if we look at it from history. But what we're experiencing here is a direct kind of power play that we talk about what happens in Tulsa or what happens in other black towns that were thriving. And in this case, the potential for thriving and certain people with personal interests who are in politics, which raises another question for me. Is Mason, as far as his party affiliation, and I don't know if that's appropriate, but you had mentioned that the county mayor is a Republican. Am I correct for that?
That's correct.
Is Mason a primary, as far as the, and I think Elliot said 80% of the population in Mason, is that a Republican
no.
Township? Okay. So that,
no.
So that also, I'm bringing these up because I think it's important for our audience to understand the kind of power dynamics that's going on. Because this is this Jason Munpower, right? He's a Republican. Yeah. Also, I mean, is the state a Republican state, right? So excuse my colloquial language, they're trying to make sure black folks don't have no control, real control, over the economic aspects of governance. That's what it sounds
like. That's
true. Right,
okay. That is true.
Yeah. Which brings me to this point. You had mentioned about, is it that April 15th you're supposed to get a judgment back based off of what's going
on? April 15th, the judge is supposed to make her ruling.
Okay. And for point of clarity, that ruling is in relationship to what? Is it because of the spending or is it just
in relationship to the the comptrollers to back off. For a temporary a TKO for them to it's temporary to get them to stop controlling of Mason finances.
No, so right now
and allow us to run our town as we have run it.
So is Mason now in this controllership for, again, for point of clarity, is it under, and I don't know if this is the right term, is it under county receivership or is it under state receivership in the sense of controlling? When you mentioned about
if they came in and took over, it would be state.
A state? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and for us them running our finances now, that is under the state. The controls are state.
Right. So this is the state is actually this little town, and I heard you say, Elliot, 10,000 people that's been running for over 150 years. The state decides it wants to now not only disband it, but control it.
Let me make a correction. It's not 10,000 people in Mason. Okay. We are very small. It may be. At one point, it was 1,334 people in Mason. But once the prison shut, it's like a little over 1,000 now, maybe 1,080 something. Ooh. Here or there, give or take.
That would be not only a, and correct me if I'm wrong, you as in government and have to look at planning and whatever, that would be a plant like that, that would be not only a boom for the initial citizens in there, but even for people who will want to come into for housing and whatever, it would have a lot of ripple effects for the township, right?
Yes, it would. It would a lot of benefit. It really would.
Mm. Now, brother, I got the impression. Now, Elliot, I'll stop in a minute, but that it took. I heard that all up until is this 2016, Mason was basically controlled by a governance by whites, and maybe you have mentioned even in this theft it was one black individual that might have been involved with this $1 million sleight of hand thing going on, which Mason being held on. My question is, we're also always concerned about the organizing.
Yes.
I take it was some organizing to bring Vice Mayor Mason into political power. And again, to celebrate her win and her tenacity under this storm. What was that like, to make that campaign happen in Mason to overturn? Was it an easy organizing effort? Was it a difficult organizing effort? How was that?
Go ahead. Are you talking to me?
No, I was asking, but I want your perspective too. But let me get brother's perspective as a I take it you're an organizer in Mason.
Yes, yes, Mr. Booker, we are. We started back in 2015. There was a major problem because one family practically ran the whole city, with just one family, And so, therefore, we knew that there was a lot of things that we was going without, the water, drainage, all those type of things. Like, we was trying to figure out why that we never saw any benefits from the taxes and our utilities and things of that nature that were going through the through City Hall. So the task force was already in existence, and what we set out to do was to look amongst the citizen Mason and find more black African American to serve on the board so we can really pay attention, in other words, see what's going on on the inside, and that's what triggered the whole thing. When the election was coming up, we did find four we felt decent people that would be interested, didn't have any experience, but they was willing to learn, and there we launched a call of Underground Railroad, And that underground, the Underground Railroad, we set up meetings in homes, and from that, the time was running out, of course, as the election was coming up, and we got several people to run for alderman, and of course, the mayor, no one was interested in running for mayor. They didn't want to start off just not having any clue of how government worked. And so that we went out and campaigned, and we hit the roads, went door knocking, and thereafter, when the election came up, we took people to the polls, and they all four of the people that we had in on this underground railroad meeting, they every last one of them won. They took that seat. And when they did, the very first meeting, the following the election, the outgoing alderman, which the vast majority was white, they was very angry. They would not, matter of fact, they did not invite the new elected alderman they didn't invite him to sit at the table, even though we requested that they would sit at the table and to see how they was conducting their business there. That started the uproar right there, and that's when we found out that all the monies and everything that one of the city employees, if you would, the vice mayor can elaborate on that too, that this gentleman admitted everything that nepotism was real there in the city, and they were passing on monies to his girlfriend, to his son, to his brother, to his daddy, was the chief of the fire department. They had a nice little thing going for themselves, you know.
And the state controller and the state didn't have no problems with that. No problems at all.
Well, they came in, and when we brought that to their attention. In other words, we brought it to their attention. They already knew.
$1 million. Yeah, they knew. But let me ask Vice Mayor Mason. Vice Mayor Rivers, is your position an elected position?
Yes, my position is elected.
So you had to run for that position, right?
Yes, I ran for alderman. Yes.
And how was from your perspective as in campaigning in this moment? How was that for you? The whole process of running, you know. Have you ever ran for office before?
This will be my eighth year in office. I was there also in 2016.
Right.
I ran for alderman there, and I ran again when the 4 year was up for the seat I have now. I just been vice mayor for this year, be 2 years.
Okay. And my last question is, out of what's going on, have there been, you know, there's always been a lot of talk about what's going on. Bad in black townships, black communities. It sounds like y'all are really, based off of what you were saying, as far as only owing $250,000 from this, was that $900,000 or $1 million beginning? Have you? What's going on? Have it got national attention?
Yes, it has. It's everywhere. CNN. NBC National, CBS National. It's everywhere.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
And the reason I'm asking, of course, I'm wondering what effect will this have in relationship to this, you know, they always talk about the midterm election. And here you have the state and the state Republicans and this going on. And it's blatant. It's just as blatant as George Floyd, you know, kind of thing. And I don't, it's just interesting. But I'll turn it back over to you, Elliot.
But I want to get a couple of calls in before Vice Mayor Rivers and Mr. Harris leaves us. Mr. Harris and Vice Mayor Rivers, the importance of, because you mentioned before Mr. Harris came on, that the town had been run by whites for decades, and from what you said, a family that had been running it. The organization behind realizing that you needed to take control of your finances. Mr. Harris said that I think it was you, Ms. Rivers, or both of you, mentioned that the town wasn't getting any benefits from the municipalities, the water, the other utilities. They weren't seeing any benefits, and they knew something was wrong. So the ideal of taking control of their own town, developing candidates to run for these offices, even though, just like you said, Mr. Harris, they didn't have any experience, but you was looking for quality individuals to be able to run for these seats and take control. You know, that's very important. And that model can be utilized, whether you're talking about a town of less than 5,000 people or a city of 2 million people, similar to Philadelphia, where quality people have to be developed to take control of these seats. That's what I really want to look at. Because when you got quality people looking out for the welfare of the community, like Vice Mayor Rivers and others down there, and you being involved in the grassroots organization that you're doing, knocking on doors, getting people involved. What was the mentality of some of our people when you first started doing this? Was it what was their responses? Were they bored and willing to get involved? Were they apprehensive? Were they satisfied with what was going on? Talk about the dynamic of when you first started developing this idea and then started to knock on doors and organize.
Well, Ms. Booker, they usually in small towns, especially in the southern towns, communities, if you would, people had gotten to the point where some had felt like they actually had lost hope. You know, it was no different than it were during the slavery that what we have read about. And our foreparents have talked about slavery and during those sharecropping days, which is still a symbolic example of slavery. And so the knocking on the doors and talking to people, what have you, a lot of the people, if you express to them everything, said there is hope, you have power, you can use your power by voting, going to the polls and voting, you have an opportunity now to if you have a vision of things that you want to see for your town, for your family, so to speak, and your town, what have you, then now is the time. And that's the message that we delivered during those earlier days of sharing with those individuals. But you have a friendly conversation, because everybody in the average town, especially out in the country, ruler, and practically every family knows the other family. You know, everyone knows each other. And so we let people know everything that we don't have to settle for less. We have the opportunity there then to get what we want. And see, now is another opportunity. Matter of fact, the opportunity that our children can say, well, look, I don't have to go to Detroit. I don't have to go to California. I don't have to move out and go to California or whatever. I can stay here now and be able to have a good quality of life for my families, and for my children and my grandkids and what have you. So this is not limited to just one age group or what have you, everything. We are talking about children and everything that that maybe just turned a teenager. They can have hope for everything, you know. But we still can't afford to just assume everything that people going to go to the polls. We can't assume everything people are going to go on their own. You have to have someone to boost it, and that's where the task force came into play, and having those elected officials that understand what our fight is all about in the beginning. For all we're not fighting to take over anything. We just want to be able to have our fair share and have the opportunity. That's where it is, Ms. Booker.
Did you want to add anything to that, Vice Mayor Rivers?
I agree with what he just said. We just wanted to. The struggle has been real. Let me put it that way. Trying to keep Mason or get Mason to a certain point. And even now, it's even more real because we just want people to, especially our constituents, to stand behind us and help and yeah. take a stand. For what's right. Because if yeah. you don't stand, then yeah. you ain't gonna succeed. You can't.
Yeah.
You can't win nothing if you don't get in the fight. You gotta get in the fight in order to win. If you yeah. never get in, you'll never know if you'll win or lose. And that's I believe right. in winning. And so,
yeah.
yes, I take a stand for the Mason, for the citizens of Mason. And all yeah. I ask them to do is to support yeah. what is yeah. being done. Because yeah. we gonna make it and we can yeah. succeed. I'm yeah. looking for the next 5 years, Mason yeah. not to even look like it look. But we yeah. can do this, but we gotta yeah. take a stand against yeah. the people that are trying to put their foot on our neck and tell us we yeah. can't.
Yeah,
so right. that's what it's all about. So as yeah. long as we can do that and realize that we have just as much right yeah. to the things that are coming down the pipeline from the mega yeah. site, we yeah. have a right to keep our heritage here in yeah. Mason. You don't yeah. let nobody take away 100 yeah. and some years of heritage from you. You just
that's
don't
right.
do that.
That's
you
right.
don't let them come in and tell you what you can't do. I yeah. guess I just have their habit. If you tell me I can't, I want yeah. you to prove to me I can't. Because yeah. that's just how I am in any situation. Yeah. I believe what I believe. Yeah. And I'm yeah. going to continue to stand. But I also yeah. say this. Even with us discussing the fact of Jeff Huffman want to yeah. come in and take over, we have to also realize Jeff Huffman sits on the Ford board. He's also sitting on the board making decisions. So we have to look at all sides.
Wait a minute. Ms. Rivers, I didn't want to cut you. The same mayor or county mayor, you said, sits on the board?
Yes. On the board of Ford.
Okay. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And that's the same mayor that has bought this land on both sides of Mason?
That has bought, that yes, sir, that county has bought land on both sides of Mason. His main goal is to take over Mason wastewater system.
Right.
That's what he wants. Because that land, no matter which side it on, it ain't going to prosper him any if he don't have a water
right.
system.
Okay.
So, no, we're not going to give up. We're not going to allow him to walk in, walk over us, and tell us we're not going to exist.
You know, before we leave you, I want you to give out Vice Mayor Rivers and also Mr. Harris any way yeah. that the listening audience can help, even yeah. though they don't live in Tennessee or live in Mason. How can they yes. help? How can they contribute to what you're doing? If they got to make calls, is it any yes. way that the people can help?
Yes.
Yes.
Go ahead, Ms. Ripley.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
No, you can go
okay.
ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah. Mr. Booker,
people, the outside individuals, we have a lot of people now from the outside are really, really concerned about what we are experiencing here in Mason right now. And what they can do, they can make those phone calls. The vast majority of the people, even though they're outside of the city, they may be outside of the state, the vast majority of people that even live in North, where they are in the country, then they have families stay somewhere in the general area. They have people that stays somewhere. If they're not in Tipton County, they may be in Shelby County, which is Memphis, you know, or whatever. But they can reach out and show support by plugging in, finding out when we having meetings and things of that nature. They can do that. If any meeting that's online or what have you, they most definitely can participate. And another thing too, Mr. Booker, I would like to share too, or thing real quickly here. Entrepreneurship is something that we want to our families to know that whites are not on other races are not the only people or thing that can they, in other words, that they have a vision, they want to run a business or have a business of some of the nature, then now is the time where if you want to step out and do some things on your own, you can do that. And this Ford deal could be a vehicle to where they can use everything to build up have the resources like the cash flow are coming from the plant, things of that nature. And they can start up operations on their own. It could be small or large. It'll make any difference or anything. But we want to get people to the point where they don't have to be always work for somebody else all their life. Okay. They can start some things on their own. I think this is going to be an opportunity for many, many people or anything to young people have come along and some things that want to feel like they want to do that. I think it's a real good opportunity to do that. So everyone that know us, round about everything, we want to make sure when you come to Mason and that you can believe it's going to be a real nice, a great place to live, you know, in the near future.
Vice Mayor Rivers, any way that can they make calls? Can they call this Montau? Is there any way that outside folks that listen to the program can help?
Yes, they can. They can call the state, call Montau, call the control office. He might talk to you. Make those calls. It's nothing going to hurt making the call. Let them know how you feel. Let them know that you want to see your town prosper. Let them know you want to see your town grow. I do want to say this to our constituents that are here in the city. If people from the outside comes to your city in full force to support you, you ought to be there. Because the NAACP came in full force along with two other groups to support Mason and rally for Mason in Mason, uptown in front of the city hall a week ago. And it was successful. Miss Gloria Club, along with some of the others, they came and supported. And all I want from our citizens is just come out, support, come out with a positive attitude, come out with ideas. You'll never know if your idea worked if you don't say anything. So we're looking forward to moving forward. We're waiting for the good news on April the 16th. I mean, 15th. I'm claiming it regardless. And hopefully after that, things will just get a little bit better as each day go by. But yes, they can call, they can email, they can write. We also have, for those that maybe want to donate, we also have the grassroots organization has set up a GoFundMe for the town of Mason. And you can go on there under that website, if you'd like to donate, we feel free. If you want to send a check or whatever to the town of Mason, you can make that check out to the town of Mason, But in their line said four at the bottom, it must state for donation for debt in order for us to be able to say to accept it. But we can, you can help in all kinds of ways.
Okay.
That's a good one. I like that. I like that.
Let me see if I, a couple calls want to ask a question or make a comment. Let's go to caller. Are you there? Are you there? Let's put them back on hold. Let's go to 404.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Peace and blessings. Happy New Year, Israel. Okay, my people in Mason. All right, just y'all picked the right time to come on Elliot's show, because this is Holy Week. Okay, at Passover, this Saturday, Passover, on the Sabbath. Okay, at the Most High, take care of our ancestors out of Egypt and over here too. Okay, this Sabbath. All right, I just want y'all to, the other thing y'all talking about, just go to the Most High this Saturday on the Sabbath. Talk to the Most High on Saturday. I'm with y'all. Okay, and watch and see. Before the 15th, y'all gonna see some stuff happen. Okay. Because if they don't do right by the 15th, that same devil y'all keep talking about, solicitor, whoever, that Confederate soldier, just watch what happened to his land. All that land he bought around y'all, and that next town over, it's going to be level. So y'all watch the weather. If they don't do right with y'all, y'all do what I say. I'm going to be with y'all now. We're going to test God. Okay? This on Sabbath, okay? This what I'm telling y'all. That's what the Spirit telling me now, man. You do that this Sabbath, okay, on the first day of Passover. And go to the Most High, tell what y'all, what it is, your thanks for the Passover, and watch what happens, man. All right? Just watch what happens. Just happen. Just watch what happens in the next few days. Okay? Because y'all been seeing these storms and tornadoes be coming through the South lately, right? I know y'all got hit last week in Tennessee. I'm in Atlanta, Georgia. Okay? So I'm with y'all, and we gonna test the Most High this Sabbath and see what happens. I'm going to leave it like that, Richard Elliott. Watch and see what happened, man. All right? I'm with y'all. Peace and blessing, Israel. I'm serious. This ain't no joke.
Thanks for your contribution, brother.
Yes, sir.
Before I let you go, Mr. Harris, you made a comment about when you were organizing some of the folks, and you mentioned about some of our brothers and sisters in the South feel defeated, that they can't do, they can't fight back. I don't want you to think, and I know that you don't think that, but I don't want you to think that that's limited to our brothers and sisters in the South. You got our folks up north that feel as though they're defeated, that they can't do anything, that this system is too great. But I'm glad that you organized down there. You chose candidates from among the constituents, the grassroots, that didn't have, according to what you said, that didn't have any political experience, but were quality individuals. And see, that's the key.
Yeah.
The quality individuals that when they took those offices, you'll be able to monitor them. They'll answer to the people, and things would turn the town around. So that's a blueprint, Richard. That's a blueprint in order to make change in these communities.
Yes.
I just want to thank both of you for being with us this evening.
Let
us know what's been going on. Keep us abreast. The door is always open to both of you to come back on and to kind of let the listening audience know what has happened.
Yes, sir.
And either way, you might find me down there in Mason. I don't know.
Mason is one, is coming back, and it's coming back strong. And we really appreciate you guys and everything too, showing your love and your concern and your prayers and all the support you're giving us right now, and using the media and what have you. This is a good show. This is a good program to be able to get the message out. And we thank you guys so much, Renee, for what you're doing. I really do. And to Vice Mayor Rivers, to you and the team at Mason, what have you, we're with you. We're with you.
Thank you.
Thank both of you for being with us, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah. Yes, yes,
thank you
sir. Thank
you.
All right.
Yes, thank you so much. Right. Thank you. Yes.
Have a good one.
All right. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, our next guest, activist, organizer, and director of the Black Autonomy Network of Community Organizations, Reverend Edward Pinckney, will be joining us. And you can get involved in the conversation, too, by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Time for an awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening. Time for an awakening. With host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard this special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
For 12 years, I and others like me had held out radiant promises of progress. I had preached to them about my dream. I had lectured to them about the not too distant day when they would have freedom all here now. Amen. I had urged them to have faith in America and in white society. Their hopes had soared. They were now booing me because they felt that we were unable to deliver on our promises. They were booing because we had urged them to have faith in people who had too often proved to be unfaithful. They were now hostile because they were watching the dream that they had so readily accepted turn into a frustrating nightmare. And so the collision course is set.
And the desegregation decisions and other type of legislation and Supreme Court decisions depends upon changing the white man's mind. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us that our own mind has to be changed. We have to change our mind about ourselves.
In what way?
Well, so he teaches us the importance of moral reformation, a knowledge of self. And for instance, the average so-called Negro, he doesn't think that he can go into business and provide jobs for himself. And because of this, he thinks that he can only get a job from the white man, or he can only get clothes from the white man, or he can only get food from the white man. And we who follow the Honorable Elijah Muhammad are taught that the same thing that the white man has done for himself and his kind, if our people could be wrecked, if we could be cured of our slave mentality that was indoctrinated into us during slavery, we would realize that just as the white man can do these things for himself and his kind, we can get together in unity and harmony and do the same thing for ourselves and our kind.
I'm not wondering at all about them. I'm concerned with the suffering and the pain of the masses of black people. No one wants to pay reparations. The Jews received over $100 billion in reparations and gets $4 billion annually. A Holocaust museum was set up for them on this soil for over $200 million, and they get $21 million annually just for operating expenses. But the Catholic Church, the Pope, the Jews, the Arabs, white people in general, no one wants to pay reparations to these, the sons and daughters of Africa. So I speak to them. I don't speak to the family of those two Jews. There are too many of us for me to speak to them.
And one of the reasons why I'm always happy to come to this organization, because you're the only one, you're the only black organization, again, that understands to put race first. Race first. Race first. And I've had some white folks to tell me that I was a flaming militant, a radical, or whatever all of these names were that they called me. And I said that I am very pleased that you called me a nationalist, because you could have said that I was a member of the NAACP or the Urban League. So I said, I'm very pleased of the names that you have given. But I said that because we put race first, something is wrong with us. But everybody else puts their own first, because God bless the child who has his own. And so I think that race first is very important. And though we meet in a different venue, we're not at the slave theater, we're not at the church, we're now at the Masonic Temple, it really does not matter where we are physically. It matters where we are in our minds. And wherever we meet, as long as we know that we're Africans and as long as we know that we're black people living here in America, we know exactly who we are. You notice you can put an Uncle Tom in any venue in the White House. You can even put him in his. He's going to still be a Tom. You can put him anywhere you want. Well, it's the same thing with us who are strong people. Wherever we are, we're going to be the people that we need to be.
Let me just say this before our time winds up. And that is, I want the people in the audience to go back and look at the video clip from Roots. It's entitled something like Breaking Kunta Kinte. That scene opens with Lorne Greene sitting in, who's the plantation master, sitting in his office, and then Fiddler comes in and says, we don't want to be too hard on the runaway. Kunta Kinte has just run away and been caught. And so the time comes for him to get his lashing. And if you look at this scene, it's about 9 minutes, and study the scene. Study the role of everybody or bodies that are in this particular clip. And you will find that there is an equivalent role in the political life of our country today, whether it's on the national level or on the local level. There's the black man who actually does the whipping of Kunta Kinte. There's the white man who does the whipping. There's the black man who intervenes with the boss man and tries to save the life of Kunta Kinte. There's Kunta himself, who eventually is forced to admit that his name is Toby. And there's dozens of bystanders, black, who are watching. This is a very powerful scene. And it's an analogy of exactly what is happening in our community today. Let's give those characters names in our community and call them what they are and then take care of business about that.
Back to Time for an Awakening. It's 8:29 here in the Sunday edition of Time for an Awakening, and we're in. We're up for our next guest, activist, organizer, and director of the Black Autonomy Network of Community Organizations, Reverend Edward Pinckney. Richard, the first time we had because this relationship with Reverend Pinckney has been going on a number of years now. First time we brought him on the program, we had another host, myself and Brother Reggie. He was in prison at the time for quoting Bible verses to the judge. That thing was thrown out on appeal after he had spent over a year in jail. The second time, Reverend Pinckney was getting signatures together to recall the mayor, I think, and he can come on and clear it up. And he was arrested and put in prison, spent over 2 years in state prison. And it was thrown out by the Supreme Court because they didn't have any evidence and he didn't break any laws. So, you know, listen, this is my opinion. I think that they've been trying to break Reverend Pinckney because of his activism. Two times, spent long prison terms in the state prison, and it still hasn't stopped him, but the pressure against him haven't stopped either. I'm glad to have and call him my friend. Reverend Pinckney is with us this evening. Reverend Pinckney, are you there?
I am here. Can you hear me?
I hear you. I'm glad to have you back with us.
Oh, it's an honor. It's an honor to be here with you, my brother. I tell you, Elliot, it's, you know, the war. You know, this is not a conflict. This is the real deal. This is a war that we're in, and we're going to continue to fight this war until we win. And I believe in that. I believe that we can win if we fight. And if we don't fight, we're going to lose. That's for sure.
Reverend Pinckney, talk about what has happened. You know, when you were on with us before several months ago, the test was ran and discovered that the water system in Benton Harbor had been poisoned with lead, and it was contaminating and hurting the residents of the community. You had water coming in. You were dispersing water to the residents and trying to alert the public to what's going on, tried to get the governor and other elected officials there to do something about the situation. Talk about, they did something about it, all right. Talk about what has happened since then and what is currently happening now.
Well, here's the deal right here. For over 4 years, the city of Benton Harbor has been drinking contaminated water. And nobody really cared. Even black people don't care. Black people don't even care about it. You know, they're not going to listen to black folks. You see, because you and black people means nothing. They mean nothing to white folks. And that's really what it's all about. And black people really stands with white folks in order to just like that talk that you have just put on there about Kunta, you know, and the people with the whip. This is what's going on here in the city of Benton Harbor. And this is what we're doing now. Black folks do not stand up and fight back. You got so many black people fighting with white, fighting alongside of white folks against black people, and that's what creates the mess that we're in today. There's not a reason in this world that the city of Benton Harbor should have been drinking contaminated water for over 4 years. There's not a reason in this world. But the only reason they was allowed to drink this water was because they were black, you see. And that's why what's happening today is the problem. Where we at today is that nobody actually took the time out to say that this is wrong, you see. What we did, we had to file a petition with the EPA, the federal government, in order to get things moving. We became a whistleblower. What we did, we blew the whistle on the governor and the scumball black mayor that we have. They call himself, I can't call him Muhammad no more. He done lost that title. He's back to his old original name, Marcus Singer. That's what he is. He cannot wear a bow tie anymore. That's over for him. He's a low-life scumball who works against the people in the city of Benton Harbor and helped create this problem, and we not knowing how bad things really are in the city of Benton Harbor. But here's what's important. When you fight, you win. And I'm a perfect example of that. I fight every day. And I got a lot of notches on my pistol because I win. I fight. The problem is when you fight, you're going to bring the administration, the white power against you and black power against you. See, black people don't like to see you winning either. They don't like to see you defeating that white man. They don't want to see that. You see, they want them to have you on your knees begging, don't kill me. Don't destroy me. Don't hurt me. That's the attitude that we have when it comes to black people. They hate to see you whooping on these white folks. And believe me, I've been whooping on them. I've been tearing their butt up. Every time they try to do something, every single time they do something, they run up against the right black man because I don't hold them up. I don't hold them up. I don't take no prisoners because I can't afford to feed them. And I let them know that, you know, you in for a fight. And I don't bring a slingshot to a gunfight. I might bring a bazooka or something because I know what we have to do in order to beat these people. You know, we have to stand up to them and let them shoot their best shot. See, the best thing they got for you, they can send you to prison. That's what they got. That's the weapon that they use against black people. And most black folks is scared to go to jail. I'm not scared. I'm not afraid, especially if it's going to help my people. See, I don't fight for these older people. I don't do that because these old dogs, they're stuck in their ways. I fight for the next generation. That's what I fight for. That gives me the energy to stand up to these people because I know that if I'm doing what I'm supposed to do, I'm going to build a foundation for these people to climb upon and build. I know that. So dealing with this water is something. Lead in the water will kill you. We had lead as high as 889 parts per billion. 15 is the danger zone. Plain 15. We had another one that was over 605.
And wait a minute. 15 is the danger zone.
Right. 15 is a danger zone. If anything over 15 is the action of that brings in the folks bring in the governor. But Benton Harbor had this for over 4 years. Benton Harbor had over on an average of it was 24 parts per billion of lead in the water. And nobody said a mumbling word because it was a black city. Even the mayor didn't say that. He knew it was this way, but he couldn't say nothing because Whirlpool Corporation was trying to sell these homes around this Jack Nicklaus golf course. So let the people in Benton Harbor, they black, let them die, you know. Let them die off. Let their children, let this lead eat up their brain. Let this happen. This is the way it is here. And black people, we be crying. It ain't all just white folks doing it. It's black folks doing this too. And you know what hurts me more than anything else? This guy, this mayor we have now, he was a friend of mine. He was a friend of mine. Matter of fact, Minister Louis Farrakhan, he used to come visit me at my home. And we let this guy come in. We would never let him come in. But he wanted to come in. And the minister told him, he said, well, I want you to run for mayor. Reverend Pinckney, I'll help you. But then he said this is important. He said, will you take care of the people? He said it three times. Each time this slime ball said he was going to take care of the people. Soon as we got him elected, that Negro flipped. He went to the other side and did in front of the white folks. You see, he started kissing their butts soon as that he was given his oath. And that really, really hurt it because at that time I was in prison. I did a recall to get him in that position. So I went to prison to get him in that position, and he rubbed my face right in it. This is the type of person that we was dealing with, and this is the type of person now. He can't wait to kiss somebody white butt. He don't know whether it's going to be a Republican butt he going to kiss or a Democrat. He just run around looking for a butt to kiss. And it's unfortunate. All he want to do, he'll tell, oh, I just got off the phone with the governor. Like that. Well, that ain't helping nobody. You should have known what to do. Why would I have to file this petition to make something happen if you know what to do? It's simple. He have no clue. They had no clue what to do. You know, it's so embarrassing that we have to fall in line like this and when we complain to the white man. No. It's some of this is us. It's us. You know, we have to be able to carry our own weight. And that's what we don't do. We want to be like them so bad that we would do anything to be with them. All they have to do is buy people. Look, we got 9 elected officials that's black. 9 of them. And we only got 2 ladies that's worth anything. The other 7 is nothing but sleazeballs. They can't wait to kiss butts. And we sit around here complaining. They didn't even care that the water was contaminated. They was mad at me because I'm the one who exposed them. But I'm not trying to win no popularity contest. You don't have to like me, you know. Matter of fact, you don't even have to talk to me. That's how I feel, you see. But unfortunately, what we have done, we have built this thing up around black folks that they are, if you elect an official, you all this in a bag of chips. You ain't, you know, these people here, if you came here, none of the slaves there. We even got a black chief of police. And he can't solve nothing. He can't even solve a math problem. That's how bad he is. And yet still, we walk around here like they somebody. That burns me up because what we're doing, we're putting these people on a pedestal and they're destroying our community and you're saying it's all right. Is it because of lack of education? Or they never learned to be a critical thinker? It's one or the other. But we're in a fight for our life. It's not just here in Benton Harbor, it's all around the country.
Yes.
It's all around the country. And we have to learn how to stand up and fight back. Until we're able to do this, we're going to continue being in this compromising position, you see. And then it's not about a Reverend Pinckney. It's not about that. You know what it's all about? It's all about our children. That's what we should be building upon. When we can build upon our children, we have a foundation to build. And that's what we lack right now. Let me tell you this. All this is going on here. On March 25th, I'm pretty much minding my own business. Two white detectives showed up at my house. Two white detectives showing up at my house. And they were sent by the governor to my house. And here's what they said. Listen to this. They said, now I've been giving away water for over 4 years. They said that Reverend Pinckney was taking water to South Bend, Indiana, state water, and selling it. Now, South Bend is 45 minutes away one way. Round trip is 90 miles. So they believe that Reverend Pinckney going to take, let's say that's about an hour and a half trip, going to take 20 cases of water, probably get a dollar off of each case or two, and I'm going to take them up to South Bend. And that was the most ridiculous thing I ever heard in my life. That was so stupid. I wouldn't even let that come out of my mouth if I was them. All it did was make them look stupid. But they was trying to find a way that they can crush me, you see. See, they figured that Pinckney is stupid enough to take water from here up there and make a dollar off of it and use that money he made for gas and old money, that's the way they were thinking. It's the most ridiculous thing I ever heard. Then they went on to say, I got some people, I work around homeless people, and I let them work with me. They want to know how come they didn't have no cell phone. And my question to them, my answer to them was, that's none of my business. That's, you know, if you want to make it your business, go ask them. But it's none of my business, you know, and I'm not going to make it my business, you see, because I don't let them get away with stuff, you see, because they will. Then they told me the water testing, the 889 parts per billion. What we did, all we did was pick it up. We couldn't do the test. Our job was to just pick it up. And one lady had pee. Well, I can't say she actually did it herself, but it smelled like pee. And we took it in, and it was contaminated. They threw it out. So they want to know, the lady wouldn't confess that she peed in the bottle, which if I was her, I wouldn't confess either, you know, that I peed in the dorm bottle. But my thing is, I'm glad I had people with me to say that when we got it, it was that way.
Mm-hmm.
So they was like, well, they don't like that because I try to cover my butt when I'm dealing with these folks. Because to me, that's important. So they was trying to say what they was trying to do, say that something was wrong with, well, I did something to the testing. That's what they was trying to say. That I did. But I said, once I turn it over to the city, that's on them. It's no longer on me, brother. So you can forget that. And I'm doing it free. I'm doing it from the goodness of my heart. I'm not doing it, you know, just so you basically, I had no jurisdiction. Nobody had no jurisdiction over me. I'm just doing it just to be doing it. So ain't no sense of you going nowhere with this. Just forget it. Oh, now they real mad. They mad now because a black man can talk this way to these devils, you know, because they not used to a devil, a human being talking to them like that, especially, you know, when you are two white cops, you know, because we might pull our gun out and shoot you. That's the mentality that they have. So we goes on. I'm housing some water filters at my building. I'm charging them $500 a month. They want to know why for 6 months that I'm charging them $500 for storage. I told them.
Now, wait a minute. Now, Reverend Pinckney, the state is housing these filters?
No, I'm housing at my church.
Okay.
Two big rooms. And I want to be paid for it. You know, it's just that simple.
No,
they haven't paid.
The state.
But they, Yeah, the state. The state need to pay me.
Okay.
You know? So, you know, because most of the time people, see, when it comes to government and stuff like that, people fall into that trap, you know, like they're superior to you. These people is not superior to me. You see what I'm saying? I care less about them. If I was white, you wouldn't even worry. Would you accuse a white person of taking a water to South Bend 90 miles there and back? I mean, how many can you take to South Bend and make if you're going to make a profit? That's the most ridiculous thing. Would you accuse a white person of tampering with something, knowing that it's not true, because it would be virtually impossible? But this is what they do. This is what they do to us. And we accept it. And the reason why they're able to get away with this, the community. The community is not going to stand up and say, whoa, wait a minute. Doesn't none of that make any sense? Black folks are so scared of white folks. The only people that black people is not scared of is black people. If you look at a black person, he'll shoot you. And he could be walking around with a size 18 white foot up his butt and not saying a mumbling word. But if you look at him, step on his feet, and here's the best example I can give you. In Chicago, the Magnificent Mile, you may not know about that, but that's one of the upscales area. Black man walking down the street. Another black is really, you know, real crowded. You know, it's like a crowd thing. And another black man accidentally bumped into this black man. It was an accident. He pulls out his gun and shoots him. All these white folks bumping into him. But when it came to this black man bumping into him, he pulls his gun out, and shoots him. What is going on? That doesn't make any sense at all. But this is what they have made us into. We sit around here and we'll fight with each other, and them devils is all over us. We scared to open our mouth. We got 9 council members. We only got 2 that will stand up to these white folks. Only 2. They call them, patting them all on the back of their head, calling them all kind of names. And these are elected officials, and they don't say a mumbling word. They just glad to be in their company. This is what we're dealing with. This is why we got to change the way we do business. We either have to be more aggressive or we all going to be dead. Because even these black folks, I don't believe in taking no prisoners. Because I think that where we at today, we're in a mess. And it's everybody who got lead pipes gonna have lead in their water. That's something that you're gonna, but it's not just lead in the water of Benton Harbor. We have bacteria in the water that's more deadlier than the lead.
Okay.
But they didn't want to address that part until I had to bring it up about 2 months ago. And so I blew the whistle on them 2 times. Now they doubly mad at me. Now that Pinckney gotta go. I don't care where he go. We gotta get rid of Pinckney, you know. And that's how the process worked. And they could not get away with this if black folks stood up and said, no, he's fighting for us and we're going to fight for him. They're not going to do that. That is not going to happen. And I don't ask them to. That's why I go around the country speaking. I let people around the country come and fight. And that's how I win. I could never win with these people here in Benton Harbor. Never. And I wouldn't even try. Because if I concentrated just on these people in Benton Harbor, I'd still be in prison. Because they're not going to move an inch. And here's the sad part. They don't even care about their own children. I've never known a mother who didn't care about their children. Never. They rather let these people allow their children to suffer than say, no, you're going to do this right. And I got these folks moving. It ain't no accident. They running around here all hands on deck. These white devils, they got this all hands on deck. They fixing these pipes. They running around, because if they don't, they're going to hear from Pinckney. They say, well, we're going to get rid of Pinckney. Then we don't have to be running around if we get rid of them. These folks ain't going to stand up for nobody. This is what they say. I don't need these people here in Benton Harbor to stand up for me. I don't even want them because I don't trust them. But we have to make sure we're doing what we need to do. Listen, I know we don't have much time, so if someone needs to ask a question or two, I'm good for it.
Richard, jump in here.
Hey, Reverend Pittman, you just like, you done said it all. I mean, for me. But is Marcus coming up for election anytime soon?
Next year, the 20. He's supposed to be running for Congress as an independent. So let me explain that. See, the Republican Party is in trouble. But by him running as an independent, black people vote for black folks. I don't care how bad they are. He done killed with this war and not telling them that the war is bad. It don't make no difference here in Benton Harbor. They're going to vote for him. If he can rattle off maybe 1,000, 2,000 votes, then the Republican Party, and I don't care nothing about no Republican Party, I don't care nothing about no Democratic Party, because both of them are evil to me. I don't care which one, they both evil. I don't really know what to do when it comes to voting now, because these people are evil. So he been paid to run as an independent to help the Republican Party. This is a Muslim brother. And I love my Muslims. I love them. But this guy, I can't even like him. His wife came to City Hall, listen to this, and told everybody, he got 6 children by this woman. And she told everybody that she was a single-parent mother, that this guy ain't worth a nickel, she was telling them. And y'all got the nerve to vote for him? I mean, it was the most devastating things I ever heard. She told them, she said, this y'all vote for this guy right here? This guy, he don't care about his children. He don't care about nothing. He don't care about the citizens of Ben. Only thing he care about is himself. And that's a true statement. That's no exaggeration. Only thing he care about is him. And I didn't pick it out. But this girl told me, she said, Reverend, I know you like this guy, but he ain't no good. She told me, she said, he ain't no good. I know how you is when you have somebody. You want to support him. But I said, I know you love the minister, but I'm telling you this guy is no good. And sure enough, she was right, 100%. That man, he probably don't have a good bone in his body. He didn't even have a good bone when he was a baby. That's how I look at him.
Reverend Pickney, because you said that they've been working on some of the, correcting some of the problem, at least in certain areas.
Yes.
I mean, and I do see that some of the folks there in Benton Harbor, because I get emails from them. So mm-hmm. You do have some of the people there that are behind your efforts. But what are they saying in reference to this harassment? How can the people kind of get behind you and stop this? Because when you see people coming to your home, coming to the church where you are, snooping around, and you've experienced this before. When they do these trumped up things and next thing you know you're in state prison. So how
there you go.
How are the people trying to help protect you? Put it that way.
Well, here's what I do. I don't count on people here in Benton Harbor because I don't want them because you can't trust them. But I got support all around the country. So what I'm utilizing, like the letter I sent you, utilize that letter. Write a letter to that governor. Tell them we know what you're doing. You angry because he blew the whistle on you, and this is election year, and this is going to hurt her. This is going to kill her, matter of fact. This is going to erase her because I can get, 20,000 votes for her if I wanted to, easily, you see. And she's going to need every one of those votes, And what I see across the state, people are fed up with her and her Gestapo attitude. If you don't do what I say, I'll send law enforcement on and get you. That's the attitude that she has, and that's what she's been working on.
Well, you got, it's problems in several of the cities in Detroit, in Michigan, in Flint, without question, in Benton Harbor. I guess in Saginaw, it's the same. The pressure there among the residents, the community, and you have elected officials that sit back And this is the problem. I mean, what you're talking about, Reverend Pinckney, is not just in Benton Harbor.
Yeah.
This is the problem nationally with so-called black leadership that walk around with their chest out and have prestige in the neighborhoods, but don't care anything about the people that they're supposed to be representing. This is a major problem.
But some of that is our problem.
Yes, I agree.
Let me say this. If I know that you are a sellout and you affected my children, the future of my children, if you affected the neighbor children, that's my children too. And you want, if I owned a barbershop and you came to my barbershop, I wouldn't cut your hair. If I owned a gas station and you just snuck and pumped some gas out, I would suck that gas out of your tank. And I wouldn't let you have no gas. And if I owned a grocery store, if you came to that grocery store and wanted to buy some food, you wouldn't buy no grocery out of my store. I don't want your money. I don't want nothing that you got. But that's how we have to treat these people. We got to stop putting them on a pedestal, making like they're somebody, and we know they're not nobody. Because it's too many of them. They're all over. Everywhere you go, you see these black sellouts. This year, we gave the mayor the Sambo of the Year Award. And it was close. We had the chief of police. We had this black judge, Mayfield. We had all these people there. They were all running neck and neck. And the mayor nosed them out. He nosed them out. He won by nose.
You're killing me. He said it was close. Look, y'all. Oh, yeah, what he said. At the bottom, it was close.
It was just too close to breathe because either one of them could have jumped on top, you know? If we had it ran in another day, it would have been a tie. And we didn't know what we'd do because we only had one plaque.
let me grab a couple. And wait a minute. Before I go to we got a couple callers here. Reverend Pinckney, the clergy there in the town, the black clergy, they know your work. They know that you spent two different times in prison. And I'm not talking about a couple of days. You spent two times where you was in prison for multiple years for activism, not stealing money, not murder, not larceny, or anything like that for activism for the people. Where are they in reference to your efforts? Are they behind you? Are they silent partners for your activities, but they don't want to come out? Because I know that a lot of the clergy in every city, especially black clergy, is tied in with a lot of these elected officials. So I'm quite sure Benton Harbor is no different. But how are they in reference to what you're doing?
Well, let's put it this way. When I quoted Deuteronomy 28, starting with the 14th verse, not one single minister in this town came out to say that it was wrong. You didn't have to support me, but you're claiming you support God and God's word. So I quoted God's word, and not one single minister stood up and said that what he did was the right thing to do or anything. Matter of fact, they was all riding with the white folks, every last one of them. Here's something that happened during that period of time. Minister Farrakhan came and gave them a tongue lash for not standing up for God's word. Because Minister Farrakhan is my friend. He's still my friend. You know, we just got a guy running loose around here, you know. But he told them, he gave them a lecture. And then when he got through, he told them, this one guy got up and gonna tell him he don't believe in Jesus Christ is the Son of God. And he whooped on that man for about 30 minutes in a very delicate way. But that is important because these guys, I quoted the Bible and wrote it in a newspaper. And simply said, if you do not hearken to the voice of the Lord thy God and do all these things are going to come upon you. And this judge said that was a threat on his life, his wife's life, his children's life, everybody's life. Well, it's obvious he was doing something wrong, because that's simply what it said. If you're doing right, it's not a threat to win the threat in the first place. It's just biblical terms. So they're not for me, and they never will be for me. And the reason they're not, we don't have that many men of God here. We got a lot of churches, but very few men of God here. Very few. I got one special guy, Dr. Times. We've been around a long time. He do a lot of stuff in the community. They don't really like him. They don't like nobody that's doing right for the people, you see. They don't want you to do right. They want the people to stay dumb. They don't want you to provide information to them. And they will do anything in their power, to go to that courthouse and say, we want y'all to come after him or something. These are men of God. These are supposed to be men of God, you see. But this is what we fall into. It's black folks. Black folks is a problem among themselves, you see. But here's my thing. If you're not with me, that means you're against me. And that means that I'm going to run right over you. Don't get in my way. If you get in my way, you're going to get ran over. Then you're going to have to go get the white man, because that's the way it's going to be. Because I don't hold these people up, you know. I don't sit here and do what I do. Everything I do it has to be ordained by God, because I could not do what I have done. I could not have done all the stuff that I have done, changing laws, the juvenile lifers and stuff like that, bringing in a court-appointed attorney that's going to help these people. These are stubborn work. I only got 25 people out of jail, out of prison, that have served a total of over 800 years in jail, you see. And that's my work. You know, that's the work I do, you see. And I don't ask nobody for any money. Matter of fact, this juvenile lifer, he been calling me since 2002. He called me. And I accepted his calls, collect calls. He got out in 2017. Live right down the street from me, and have not said one word to me, not even called me. I called him one day to find out how he was doing. He was in a hurry to get off the phone. He said, I gotta go. But that doesn't stop me from helping anybody else. That's just one incident. But out of the 25 people, well, it'll be 25 this year, listen, only 3 people have came by and thanked me. Because I'm not looking for any recognition. My job is to complete the mission. And in my sight, nothing supersedes the mission. That's what I believe.
Let's grab a couple calls here. Let's go to 505, see if they got anything they want to add or question. 505?
Listen, all I can tell you, man, who's this Reverend Pinckney?
Yes.
God bless you, brother. I thought it was just me that saw what was... Man, you are something else, man. You just blew me away, man. You're on the case. But everything you said is 150% correct. You understand what I'm saying?
I do, and thank you.
And I feel sorry for you, man, that you ain't got no support. Harbor, Benton, where is that? In Michigan somewhere?
Benton Harbor. It's about 70 miles from Chicago. It's 175 from Detroit. And it's about 80 miles from Grand Rapids and 45 miles from South Bend.
Okay. Listen, Marvin Gaye was my cousin.
All right.
I used to tell him all the time, all them leeches that's hanging on him, want to be around him. I don't even know you. You understand? Everything I used to tell him. It's just amazing, man. I thought I was the only one out here on the planet that could see what you see and understand what you're going through. I understand exactly what you go. Black folks, black people, African, whatever they're calling themselves, they are their worst enemy, man.
Mm.
They are their worst enemy. I understand everything you said. I'm just laying up here. I mean, I can't disagree with a damn thing you said, man. Not one thing. Because I see it every. I live in New Mexico. You think it's bad in Harbor, but out here, I don't know I ain't never seen black people like this in my life out here. They don't have a clue. This is amazing, man. This is overwhelming, man. Like I said, they are their worst enemy. When you go to instruct them on what's going down, what's up, what's going up, and before they even get to it, you look around, man, they on your case.
Yeah. Yeah.
They on your case. They talking behind your back. They agree with you in your face when you're talking. As soon as you, I went through this in the army. You try to pull that coat. Yeah, man, you're right. As soon as something jump off, they come and get you. What you think about that? When you tell them the whole, run the whole thing, you got six or seven of them around you in a group. As soon as you turn your back, they're in the office telling the company commander, yeah, this guy's a problem. He's a trouble. I mean, you can't win, man.
And you know, what you're saying is so, so important, because I always say that, you know, we are our own enemy, but I deal with them on a different level. I don't want them to like me. See,
No. I understand what you're saying, but listen, they are so corrupt, man, and right. So backwards. I don't care what level you did. They snakes, man.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I hate to admit, I have to be real. I was in the military from 61 to 63 in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? And I had a lot of, I'm originally from Brooklyn, New York.
Okay.
I'm one of these, especially the cats from the deep south. Their main thing is just to get there a white German girl. I said, man, what are you seeing? These people are so special. I mean, it's just amazing. But they agree with you when you're surrounded as with. I know you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
They all down with you. Yeah, you're right, so and so. As soon as you turn your back there on the phone, or, I mean, man, listen. All I can tell you, man, is God bless you. And I mean, you're like, you're fighting, you're fighting fire. I mean, I don't even know how to express it, but everything you said and are saying, I can't disagree, because I go through the same thing with your family. Your family. You can't deal with them. You talk to them once again. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm. Soon as you turn around, they all whisper behind your back. I said, well, if you're against me, tell me to my face. Don't be talking, agreeing with me in public, never going to turn my back. Listen, man. I don't know what to tell you. All I can say, man, you definitely are God's man. Because you ain't getting no support from your people. You can believe that.
Nothing.
That ain't gonna happen.
No.
Because as soon as it get hot out there, they just, you can't, like you said, you got this dude out of jail. He lives in walking distance of you. You just calling him to check on him to see how he's doing.
Mm.
And he wants to get rid of, he wants to get off the phone because he don't want to know. You got him out of jail, and that's it. You know, hey.
Yeah, you done got me out of jail. I don't need you no more.
There's no loyalty. There's no principle. They have no principle.
No.
There's certain things I'm not going to do. I wouldn't give a damn to put a gun in my head. I'm not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
All I can tell you, man, I don't know what to tell you, man. I go through this crap. I'm 81 years old. I go through this crap every day, man.
Wow.
Family, neighbors. Let me tell you something, man. I get more support from white people than I get from black people.
That's a true statement. Yep.
They would say, be careful, but this is what's going on. That's what's going on. But be careful, because you know it's stacked against you. The white people will tell me. They ain't not gonna come out and, but they'll say, hey, but the black people will push you into the fire. You think they're gonna do shit.
You know what? You can believe that they will push you in the fire and say, he got burnt up. I don't know how he got burnt up. It wasn't my fault.
What year were you born?
I was born in 1948.
So I'm 8 years older than you. But like I said, have you been in Benton Harbor all your life?
No, I'm originally a Chicago boy. Born and raised in Chicago. West Side story.
Okay, West Side. Yeah. Listen, man. Let me, while I've been asking this, I used to play ball with this cat, George Wilson, years ago. Do you know
yeah, he George went to school, went to Marshall High School.
Then he went to the University of Cincinnati.
Yep, went to the Cincinnati Bearcats. George Wilson.
I played with him and against him. Whatever happened to George Wilson, man?
I'm thinking he's deceased at this time.
Yeah, because I'm talking to people, you know, most of these kids, I'm 81, so this back in 61, 62, back mm-hmm. I met him in an all-star game in Jersey City. He came in from Chicago. He went to, I think it was high school. He said Marshall. Was it Marshall?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, John Marshall High School. That's where I went to. I went to John Marshall.
Well, I've seen George once or twice. He came to Madison Square Garden to play with the University with Cincinnati, Tony Yates and them guys. And I mean, I asked him, and Tom Fack, I asked some people, have you, because I grew up with, you know, Jerry Harkness, you played Loyola.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Loyola Ramblers, yep.
Yeah, well, Jerry graduated, I graduated a year before. He went to D with Clinton, I went to Boys High. But I asked these cats, you know, George Wilson, like he just, like the ground opened up, and he just dropped in the hole or something, man. So you think he might be dead?
I have not heard from him, and it's a lot of people in Chicago I have not heard from. Most of them, you know, probably before, well, George Wilson was a little bit before my time, but he used to go with this girl who used to live on down the street from me, the Box. Her name was Box. I can't think of her first name, but he used to go with her, and we that's how we knew him. And then Marshall was a powerhouse in basketball, so we kind of like always hung our hat on Big George Wilson.
Thanks for your contribution, brother.
I didn't hear. Say that again.
I said thanks for your contribution.
Okay, listen, man. Good program, man. Reverend, what is your first name?
Edward.
Would you say it again?
Edward Pentley.
Okay, very good. Listen, man. All I can say is, man, stay strong, brother. That's all I can say.
Hey, I appreciate that. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thanks for your call. Yeah,
good talking to you. Okay, bye.
All thank right. you. Take care now.
Yeah, I'm working on it.
All right. Big George Wilson, yeah. Wow, isn't that a coincidence?
Yeah, mm-hmm. man.
Let's go to 647-647. Toronto, are you there?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
I can hear you well.
Okay. Oh, Reverend Pinckney, I wanted to ask you in terms of the international support, what kind of international support have you attempted to get? And I think I heard you on Chairman O'Malley Ishatella yesterday, was it?
Yesterday, yeah. Right. Yes, absolutely. That's my guy.
Well, I'm sorry, I cut you off. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, that's my guy. Absolutely. You know, we do get like people from France, people from the UK. You know, they're more supported than people that really in the United States. I can get people from around the country more than I can get people in the city of Benton Harbor. You see, and you're not going to get people in Benton Harbor, and then. They're always looking for something. You have to almost give them something in order to really to support you. You know, you tell them that the water is contaminated. You know, that really don't mean a whole lot to them. And black people are funny fools. You know, if the white man say, don't drink the water because of abundance of caution, they gonna drink the water. And that's what they've been doing. They've been drinking this water and not knowing how contaminated this water is, or knowing that the water is contaminated, but yet they would say, I've been drinking this water all my life and ain't nothing wrong with me. But that's not them talking. That's that lead in that water talking. And that's what mess up the people here. Yeah, but, you know, I'm rolling, and I'm just happy to hear a guy from Toronto. I love it.
Well, what in terms of the... there's a group called the Organization of African States. Like, do you have anybody working with you trying to get that international situation happening?
I have not. I do not.
You need to.
Well, if anything you do, Send Elliot Booker that information, and he can send it to me, and I'll contact him.
Will do. Will do.
Absolutely. Just send it to me, and I will make sure that I contact them, because right now we need all the help we can get. And we're willing, anytime we can find black people that are willing to stand up, I'm willing to go beyond the call of duty and make it happen.
Yeah, I'm living in Toronto. I live in Toronto, but I was born in Bienville Parish, Louisiana, and I grew up in California, and I lived in Detroit. So I've been around a little bit.
Absolutely. How do you like Toronto?
Toronto has got, let me tell you this. Toronto's got they got free health care. So as long as I got free health care, I'm not going anywhere. I'll give you an example. I had a son that was in, was born 1 pound 9 ounces, was in the hospital for 6 months. And when I got the bill, I think it was about $7 because I had to pay for the phone. My wife had, you know, her phone bill.
Yeah.
And if he had been born anywhere in the United States or in Jamaica, where his mother was from, he probably wouldn't have made it in Jamaica. And in America, I would still be paying for it.
I can see that. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, let me retract that. He would have made it. He could have made it because he was my wife's people live near the University of the West Indies, and they have a great hospital and great doctors there. But if he had been born, you know, say in outside of Kingston, he probably would not have made it.
Wow. Well, I know most likely, and I hate to say this, that he would not have made it here because we got one of the highest rates where the mother and the baby dies here in Benton Harbor. You see, and nobody really talks about it, you know, because it's the best cause. They control the news media also here. They tell you something. Let me say this real quick because this is a little bit off. One of the things happened here, I go door to door delivering water. The governor she was in one of her moods or something. She came and took the forklift from us. And when she took the forklift from us, we was unable to unload the 18-wheeler. And what they did, they called the news media out. And the news media came out and said that Pinckney didn't want to deliver water to people who need water. You know, try to body slam me. And it backfired. And here's the reason why they control the media. It backfired because we had people from all parts of the country here who saw and knew better. And that put another black eye on this governor. This governor we got, she got to go. She got to go. She almost like a mafia boss. If you don't do what she say, she sends out her state police officer to try to control you and do whatever. And like I said, she sent two white cops to my house. She had the nerve to send some white folks to my house. And I don't like that.
You shouldn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Thank you for your contribution, brother.
Thank you. Hey, don't forget that information.
Yeah, just email to me, and I'll make sure that Reverend Pinckney gets it.
Yes, sir, I will.
Talk to you soon.
Take care.
Let's go to 646. 646.
Hey, yeah, Elliot, could you put me back on hold? I wanted to say something about the last interview, if you can.
Okay. All right. I'll do that.
Thank you.
215.
Good evening, Brother Elliot. Good evening, Brother Richard. And good evening, Brother Reverend Pinckney. How you doing, my dear brother and sir? How you doing?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing fine. All praises be to Allah. You know, Reverend Pinckney, you know, I don't even know where to begin. First, it's an honor to talk to you, Reverend. I'm in awe whenever you come on this program because you truly, and I don't say this about a lot of Christian ministers, but you are truly in the mode of a Dr. King, Adam Clayton Powell. You are, Reverend Jeremiah Wright, you're a true man of God. I mean, you could hear the sincerity in your voice, Reverend Pinckney. You really care about our people. You care about black people. You really care about humanity as a whole and stuff. The sincerity comes through this radio big time. And you know, Reverend Pinckney, when you were just talking to Brother Elliot, and Brother Richard and the Thompson Wiggins orders about your governor up there. It's ironic you were mentioning her because you know the two of the white boys just got acquitted of you know said it was going to kidnap her and all that kind of stuff. And the other two white boys, I think their sentence was I think it was a mistrial.
The hung jury.
Thanks. It's a hung jury. And I'm saying to myself, you know, that being said, it just shows how racist this country is. Now, here these white boys can talk about kidnapping and doing harm to your governor, and yet they pretty much get away scot-free. You know what I mean? But you got other black men and women sitting in jail for mere accusations and stuff. You got a Muslim sister right now who I'm working. I'm a Muslim, as you know, Reverend Pickney, in the Nation of Islam. I'm working with various Islamic groups in this country right now, trying to free a sister from Pakistan who's in jail and stuff. Because she allegedly made a remark or whatever like that. She's in jail serving 86. She didn't kill nobody. She's in jail serving 86 years and down in Texas in the federal prison. Her name is Dr. Fia from Pakistan. Brilliant sister and stuff like that. That these white boys can threaten to do bodily harm. They're gonna kill this woman and everything, and yet they get acquitted. But again, I'm not surprised because this is white America, this is white society, right. So I'm not surprised. You know they get away whatever they get away with. They always get away with stuff in this country and stuff. You know, and that brings me to my next point, Reverend Pickney. See, like you said earlier, Reverend Pickney, there's many churches in Michigan, Benton Harbor. That's the same way if you got churches, but all these ministers truly men of God, because like I say, here in Philadelphia, and like you see around the country, you got a lot of these black ministers, they drinking the Ukraine Kool-Aid. They asking black people to link up with some white Ukrainians who have shown number of racism and a number of blatant racism against black people. And as Brother Elliot pointed out on the show Friday, you know, I mean, it's all, and the other week, it's almost laughable, Reverend Pickney, when you can have the Peace Corps members going over to Ukraine that's from Africa, and they already telling them, because they was talking about it on terrestrial radio here in Philadelphia earlier today, where they telling these black folks from Africa that if you go to Ukraine, don't be surprised if you get called a nigger. Because these white Ukrainians, they may call you a nigger, they may call you a monkey, but you got to understand them because they culturally insensitive. They don't know no better. You know, they're not used to being around black people, all kinds of foolishness and stuff. And yet you got black ministers here in Philadelphia, the country, telling black people to lock solidarity with a bunch of white races. Now, am I saying all Ukrainians like that? Of course not. But it's enough of them like that we should always take a wary eye, Reverend Pickney, instead of jumping up lock, stock, and barrel with people that gonna come right to America and be just as hateful as other white people in this country now, whether they be Irish, Italian, Polish, so on and so forth. See, we always get caught up in the nonsense. We drink the Kool-Aid and we wonder why we always, you know, behind the eight ball, so to speak. You know, we got to be more wise than that. And I'm not just getting on our, even some of our Islamic clergy need to stop, you know, jumping up their toes and they lock stock with Ukraine, because then what have these white Ukrainians ever did for us as black people? So why should we jump up there and embrace them? Because again, they no different than their white brethren that's already in this country and stuff like that. But we always get caught up in the nonsense and we wonder why our people. The condition that we stay into, because we always drink the Kool-Aid, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's poor black leadership in this country, Reverend Pickney. It's reached a crisis where it's pitiful. It's like in a pitiful state. I mean, I'll give two, three examples right now, and I get off, Reverend Pickney. For example, here in Philadelphia, you had the Garden Civic League. Now, they're a so-called black police organization. And some of the brothers and sisters in there are good. But at the end of the day, they don't even speak out like they should when it comes to injustice against black people. Because at the end of the day, they may call themselves a black organization, Reverend Pickney, but they also are many of the black Garden Civic League are members of the racist FOP. See what I'm saying? They're members of the Fraternal Order of Police, which is the notorious racist police union. So though they call themselves the Garden Civic League, they still got ties with the racist FOP and the FOP leadership in this city. You know, same through the Congressional Black Caucus. They say they're for black people, Reverend Pickney, but they are members of the Democrat Party. You ever notice the Black Caucus They don't never move out and take charge and go and be aggressive and fighting for black people unless they get some kind of okay from Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, or Biden or people like that. And to me, you call yourself the Black Caucus, but you're never working for a white Democrat party that's hell bent on keeping black people in place. And lastly, Reverend Pickney, you see what's going on. You see what these white Ukrainians coming over here to America. What do that points out? See black folks again. They're gonna get caught with their pants down. They don't see what's going on. So they bring all these white Ukrainians over here. The Democrat Party want to make them a voting bloc because if you know Reverend Pickney, you're a politically astute person. The white Democrat Party and their racist ones at the head of it. They are tired of the white bigots in the Republican Party saying that they're the party of niggas. They're the party of black people. They want to get to the point where they don't have to need the black. They want to be just like the Republican Party. Need the black vote, so they want to get these white Ukrainians over here from Ukraine and stuff, so they can become a powerful voting bloc for the Democrat Party, so they can get to the point where they can be just like the Republicans. We don't need their vote, you know. If they vote for a starving vote, we don't need them anyway. And see, black people need to understand what's going on, so again, we'll get caught with the pants now. Because this is what it's going to now. You know what I mean? So it's just sad that we got black leadership in this country that can't see the forest for the trees. They keep black people, keep misleading black people down a bad path of some kind of illusion of inclusion with this Democrat Party, and it's not there. It's just not there, brother. And that's why it's important, brother, to have people like you that's going to speak truth to power and let the chips fall where they may. And lastly, Reverend Pickney, it's a shame that you're out there waging this battle. Now, you got black people in the Congressional Black Caucus. They should be out there fighting with you. You should be getting all kind of aid and support from the Congressional, especially the representative. They should be right there with you, fighting for you to bring black people justice, clean water, good food, good schools. They should be right there with you. You shouldn't be out there waging a one-man battle, so to speak. What the hell is you call yourself a representative of black people if you're not going to fight for black people? But again, they can't do a damn thing unless they get permission from their white masters and that Democrat Party, and that's a shame, Reverend Pickney. And I close with that. LA, you know, put me on mute now. Listen for the rest of the show.
And let me say this too. What you said is so tremendous. The Ukrainians are going to be coming over here, and it's another voting block, you know. And remember, the white race is dying out. You see, this is another thing. They're dying out, and what they try to do now is rebuild them. And here's another thing that people don't know. That Ukrainian war in Russia, that's a United States engineered that.
Oh, no doubt.
This government right here is responsible for that war, but nobody want to talk about that. Nobody want to talk about the United States engineered this whole thing, and what they want to do, they want to really strip Russia of its power. NATO did.
Exactly. You see?
And the key thing that we don't really get and we don't understand, black folks can't, if it's not right in front of us, we don't see it.
We can't see nothing
if it's not right in front of us that we can see. We don't see it. Black folks, they accept everything that white folks say, and then we gotta stop reading these newspapers and listen to this news, because all it is brainwashing everybody. I still listen to it, but I'm able to cipher through the news.
Yes,
exactly.
Everybody can't cipher through the news and get answers. We're in a war. We're fighting a war. We've been fighting a war since 1852, we've been in this war, and longer before that. But we got to start fighting and fighting right. Some of us is going to be casualties.
Sure.
And we got to accept that so in order to make our this race stronger, because we got to change.
Let me show you how that you are. Last point. When I'm up here in Germantown, I go inside some of the neighborhood stores or whatever, just walking the street, and I hear black people, just the average black man or woman, and because they drink the Kool-Aid. Yeah, man, we got to support our Ukrainian brothers and sisters. They call them white folks brothers and sisters. We got to support them. That Putin is evil. Somebody need to kill that damn Putin. And I make sense to myself, what the hell you worry about Putin? Putin ain't never burnt up a black church in the United States. He never ordered the killing of black men and women in America. What the hell are you demonizing Putin for? See, but this is what happens, like you said, Reverend Pickney, when you can't decipher through the nonsense and stuff. And it just amazes me. I heard black folks say that they got venom in that Putin. nothing about Vladimir Putin, but he got venom for the man. Because they heard what, because the white media demonized the man, making him like he's the worst thing that ever came on this earth, man. And that, and it goes back to what you said, Reverend Pickney. When you can't decipher through the BS, you fall and you drink the Kool-Aid. You drink the Jim Jones Kool-Aid. And that's what it comes down to, man. You know? That's what it comes down to.
And that's a true statement. But we see, here's where I think we messed up at. See, when we were in school, we learned about the critical thinking. Yeah. They don't do the critical thinking no more. They don't do the critical thinking mm-hmm. no more. They don't do that. You see, and that's something that you know that really enhanced the community because you're able to think. They don't teach that no more. They don't teach our children how to think. All they want, you know, they teach them with basic stuff, basic stuff, and stuff that doesn't enhance their ability to think and figure out things, problem solving. Exactly. We don't go that route no more, you know. And one of the things I taught my children how to solve problems, how to do this, you know. And math have always been my biggest thing. That's my weapon, math, and that's what I learned from. You see, what we have to do, we got to get back in it and start teaching. And if the more we teach, the better things are. And we have to stop falling in line with these white folks because these white folks don't love us.
Hey, thank you, man. I couldn't have said it better myself. And a couple more points real quick. History repeats itself, Reverend Pinckney. I go back to 1991 when the first Bush was in office, when they had the first Gulf War. I would go into the little deli around right here in Germantown. Black folks don't know a damn thing about Saddam Hussein. Couldn't even spell Saddam Hussein and stuff. You gave him the S, the A-D-D-A-M. Couldn't spell it. But they were saying, because again, they listened to that white media, oh, man, we got to go over there and take out Saddam. We got to take out that bastard, mm-hmm. man. He's evil. And I'm saying to myself, evil? What the hell you know about Saddam Hussein? What the hell he ever did to you? You know what I mean? It's just amazing how we drink the Kool-Aid, man. Here up in Germantown at that time, Reverend Pickney, white racist cops was killing our people just like they doing now. Killing, mm-hmm. matter of fact, right around that time when that stuff happened, right up here in Germantown, these white cops shot a brother in cold blood right in front of his mother. And he was having a mental crisis, shot right in front of his mother, and these Negroes talking about some Saddam Hussein. I'm like saying, please, man, never again. When you can't decipher through the BS, you listen to these racist-ass white folks, and you start repeating it, you start parroting their nonsense, man. And it's dangerous for us as a people, because we're in a battle for our life and stuff, man. And last thing, I'm definitely off after this, Reverend Pickney, so someone else could get on. It's amazing. Now, you know how the white media, they got all people around the world, especially here in these United States, come with these poor white Ukrainians. It's a crisis. It's a shame what's happening to them. But yet they never show that kind of humanity towards the Palestinians. They didn't show that kind of humanity back in 94 when the Houthis and was over there fighting each other, killing it. And by the way, that was ignited by Europe and stuff like that. They ignited that fight between the Houthis and them over there in Rwanda. You didn't hear all that sympathy about outrage and human suffering. But now the white folks are dying over there in Ukraine. The whole world is sympathizing with them. It's a crying shame. It's so sad. You see children over there dying. But yet when Israel was killing innocent Palestinians, you see innocent Palestinian children all over, laying on the ground, occupied Palestine, hardly a foot from the press and stuff like that. You have three or four Jews get killed that day, Reverend Pickney, and oh, it's the worst thing in the world. 50 Palestinians get killed in the airstrike. Oh, it don't matter. That's no big deal. I mean, this is how the media keep our people so dumbed down in this country, man. That's why we have got to stop going for the nonsense. As the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said, white people's racism is manifested through their news media. If we don't learn it by now, we never will, Reverend Pickney. We got to get better. We learn better. You know better. You're supposed to do better. And we definitely have to do better. But thanks, Reverend Pickney. Thanks, Brother Elliot and Richard. I'll let some else get on, and you can put me on mute, Brother Elliot.
Thanks for your contribution.
All right.
You're welcome.
Let's go to 718-718.
Hey, what's going on, brothers? This is Brother Maurice calling from New York City. How y'all doing today?
Yes, sir. How you doing?
Great.
Brother Pickney, how are you doing, man? You know we have nothing but love for you. We love when you came on the show and you enlighten the people in the tri-state area about your battle, my brother. I can tell you one thing from my experience of doing my show. April 15th will make 24 years I've been on the air.
Oh, okay.
24 years. And, you know, except for a few real brothers, like the brothers on this show, Brother Elliot, Brother Richard, not a lot of support, my brother, but I don't do it to get praise.
Mm-hmm.
I don't do it to make money. I do it because I have a love for black people. And, you know, the thing that I was, one of my friends I've been friends with for years, I did a show just recently, and I talked about, not that I'm not concerned about anybody in the war dying, you know, because, you know, I'm a human being, and a human dying is important to me.
Right.
But I brought up the point that there is 13 million people starving in Africa right now, in sub-Saharan Africa. There's a drought. There's a locust infestation. And the United States is over there bombing Muslim brothers and sisters in that particular area. And ain't nobody said a damn thing about that. And these black people, just like the brother just got off the phone was talking about, this brother said to me, well, you know, you comparing apples and oranges. And no, I'm not. I'm talking about what is going on and how the media is not making it a fair comparison. Because like the brother said, and I maybe said on the show, you saw early how they recognized the humanity of the Ukrainians. But they didn't do that in any situation. Matter of fact, you go right to the border. There's still Mexicans and there's still Haitians on the border in camps, and they still ain't said a damn thing about letting any of them in. Not a word.
Yeah.
So, I told him, regardless of the fact, I said, I'm one voice crying in the wilderness, right? So they got all of these channels talking about what's right for America to be doing. And I'm telling you, there's a different narrative that's out here. I love black people. I damn sure will never apologize for that. And wherever they are in a struggle, I'm in a struggle with them.
That's right.
I don't give a damn about what's going on in Europe. Mm-hmm. I said it. I give a damn about what's going on in Africa.
Amen.
I give a damn what's going on in the Caribbean. I give a damn what's going on in Benton Harbor. I give a damn what's going on anywhere where black people are in a struggle, and I don't apologize for it. They don't.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And let me say this. You know, what you're saying is so right. I would never apologize for what we do here, what I'm doing or what anybody else is doing, because, number one, they got, like you said, they're bombing in Africa right now, and nobody's saying a mumbling word because they control the media.
Exactly.
Black folks, you know, black folks won't, you know, a lot of times they think they, you know, they'll get a little tidbit or something, and then they'll think they telling people something that they don't know, because what you're doing, you're spreading that white propaganda around your community. That's what they want you to do. The Ukrainians, they got 100,000 of them devils coming to this country, and they gonna get cockroach treatment. Because they're going to get everything they need. And unfortunately, we got people right here in this country right now starving to death, and nobody's saying a mumbling word. You need to go inside these black communities and help these black folks. That's what you need to do. You know, talking about help the Ukrainians, they on their own. You know, hey, I know that the United States, I know they created this war so they can figure out a way to crush Russia. That's the game plan. But unfortunately, we got other problems. We got to deal with black people. We got to make sure that we're doing what we're supposed to do. And here's what people say. We're 50 million strong black people. They tell all you is only 40 million. No, we're 50 million strong. And the point is, we have to figure out a way how we're going to help each other. You see?
Now, think about this for a second, right? Mm-hmm. All of the money you're talking about, they're giving you Ukrainians. Black farmers have still got their money tied up in court. The $5 billion for the mistreatment of black farmers is still tied up in court. I love your statement. Not a mumbling word.
Mm-hmm.
Black people running around and worry about something. We talking about your own people.
Yeah.
Your
yeah.
own people.
Yeah.
In this damn country. But this government has
discriminated and hated them and tried to destroy them. And we're trying to do something to do what's right by them, make this government do the right thing, and not a word. Well, we're not going to, like I said before, we're not suckers like some of these people are. I call them suckers because you know something? It's a terrible thing to know that you have price and you sell yourself for it. And a lot of these people are sold out.
Ooh, they sold out. But let me tell you this. I want you to think about this. You had my back. I got your back, black folks. Do you remember that? Do you remember someone saying that during the election? Mm-hmm. How I ain't got nothing. And they never will have black folks back. White folks is never going to have black folks back. Because one thing, black folks going to always continue to vote Democrat, and they don't even have to do nothing for us, and we're going to continue doing the same thing over and over and over again. That's what we do. We don't like changes, you see. That's too much, you see. But what we have to do, we know we got the votes. We can make them bargain for our votes and make sure that we get what we deserve more than what they want to give us. We shouldn't have to ask them for nothing. You know, it should be put on the table, and it should be there for us, for each one of us to pick up. We're begging people, and we're talking about racism. Forget about racism. You know, we're never going to get rid of that. That's forever with these white devils. That's white. But the way to defeat that is for us to come together and deal with ourselves and become strength. And that way, I believe in strength in numbers, you see. And I believe in that. And that's what I fight for. I believe I'm fighting for that next generation, our children. That's who I'm fighting for. I'm trying to build a foundation for them so they can get on that platform and move forward. You know, these other devils, ain't nothing you can do about them. They ain't going to listen to you.
My mother and my father both were going on. They passed on and stuff. But I remember distinctly something that they told me. They said to me that just don't go get a degree and don't come back and get involved in the community. And if you ever watch my show, you look in the upper right corner of over my shoulder, every episode you see an image of my mother and my father. Mm. Well, I honor them because I remember the work that they did in the community and stuff. And so, you know, we continue that fight. And, you know, you already know, Brother Pinkney, we with you. And Elliot and Richard know I'm with them. And I know y'all got my back. And, amen. You know, but you all we have to do is continually help each other, brother.
You can actually count on me.
I know. And you saw as soon as, you know, Elliot let us know what was going on with you, we came in right behind you.
Yeah.
And got you right on the show and got your information out there around the country and stuff. You know, and I find it absolutely amazing that people don't think. See, the wonderful thing about the show, that this was an excellent. First of all, I want to congratulate Elliot and Richard on the excellent show they did tonight. I think it's wonderful that people around the country are fighting. And the problem is too many people don't know that people are fighting.
Mm-hmm.
They're thinking that we're getting laid down and people are getting rolled over. And it's not the case. And Elliot, I'm gonna say this, and I'm gonna get off. You are 100% right. You know, in terms of we have to decide to organize and elect our own people and put them in office. Because I'm sick and tired of the same old game. What do they say when you do the same thing over and over again, expect a different result? What do they call that?
Insane.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And
we're
involved in the same politics in the United States, and it's not getting any better. But brothers, I got nothing but love for y'all. I thank you again for the great work that all of y'all are doing. And I'm going to hang up and listen to the rest of the show.
Hey, let's talk soon.
We'll talk.
Okay now.
All right.
All right, my brother.
Reverend Pinkney.
Yes, yes.
Listen, anything, give out any contacts that people can help if they want them to make some calls, things like that, or even if you want them to donate with some water. The floor is yours.
Here's what I would like to see people doing right now. We got to struggle with government itself. I would like to see people You have that that letter that I sent you. I would like yes. for you to share that letter with the people that's listening. And that's how I fight. I believe that I like to go straight to the doorstep of the person who I feel that we should be fighting with. I don't like to beat around the bush or allow them to think that I'm intimidated by them. See, that's a weapon that they use against black people. They think of all black people is afraid. You're afraid to go to jail. You're afraid to do this. We'll cut you off. You know, and these are the weapons that's in their toolbox that they use against us, and we accept it. That's why they can't defeat me, because I don't care. I don't care about none of that stuff. Only thing I care is that my people have clean, safe water, and I'm building a foundation for our children. And that's your children, my children, the people next door. That's what I care about. So what I would like for people to do, if they will, or if they can, they can also donate. They can go to bhbanco, bhbanco.org. There's a PayPal there, and you can donate whatever your heart desire, you know, and that would be huge, because if you don't have the resources, you can't fight. One of the reasons why I win when I go to court, I have resources to fight with them. If you got the resource, you can win. If you don't have the resource, you can almost forget it. It ain't going to happen. So we got to build a war chest. And if those of you who are out there, if you go to bhbanco, bhbanco.org, there's a PayPal there, donate. Or you can write me a check. You can make it out to Banco, B-A-N-C-O, 1940 Union Avenue, Benton Harbor, Michigan, 49022. That's Banco, B-A-N-C-O, 1940 Union Avenue, Benton Harbor, Michigan, 49022. Make it out to Banco. Hey, everything helps, you know, and we need to build a war chest. We don't know what this governor is up to. She is not going to let a black man beat her down, you see, because she got all the tools in her toolbox. So, but we need resources to fight back, and we can do it, you see.
Reverend Pinckney, I'll make sure that all that information is up on the website so people can see how they can donate. And plus that, I'll post that letter also.
Very good. Let's do that. Let's make it happen. And listen, let's stay in touch. Let's do what we need to do. And listen, I guess we can have to say goodnight.
You know, I'll talk to you soon.
All right, then. Y'all take care now. Peace. Richard, Elliot, and the rest of the team, it's going down. That's all I can tell you. And we're not taking no prisoners, because we can't afford to feed them. It's going down. Talk to y'all soon.
All right now.
All right now.
Richard.
Can you hear me?
Vaguely. Faintly. Yeah. It was an interesting program tonight, man. A lot of information given out about what's going on in both Mason and in Benton Harbor. Let me go back with the few minutes that we have left. Let me go back to New York City, because he said he wanted to say something in reference to the first guest. 646?
Yeah, what's going on, Richie and Elliot? Yes, listen, sir. Man, you know, in that first interview, you left out a key element to what's really going on in Mason and what the real deal is, and I'm surprised they didn't even say anything about it, is it's really about the money that I think it's Nissan gave to the area that was going to trickle into Mason on a real serious level that, you know, the people that's taking over have no control over. That's the real issue. Also, I don't even know, in all honesty, if those people that are at the leadership position are really equipped to deal with the onslaught that's coming after them by the outside agencies. I don't even know if they have sued them, what level of the suit that they do have going. But that's really what it's all about. It's the control of that money from, I think it's Nissan.
And I don't know if they, as the council or whatever, ever spoke to the people at Nissan and told Nissan that they need to address how they're now being manipulated and, you know, taken over by the other agencies. That's really what the deal was. And through the whole interview, I didn't hear them say anything about that. And that's really what it's all about from what I've heard from the beginning of the whole situation. So I don't know, but it's really about millions, or I think it's maybe even the billions of dollars of this new plant that's supposed to be built in that area. And I think it may even have
it's not Nissan, it's a Ford plant, and they talked about that. That was the whole basis of what they were talking about.
Okay, because I didn't hear that part of them saying, you know, because that's, so it is Ford, it's not Nissan.
No, it's Ford. It's electric car plant.
Right. If they ever got Ford involved, from my understanding, Ford had some issues with it. From some of the reports that I heard, they didn't like the way it was being done. And, you know,
Ford had issues with what? Ford had issues with what?
Oh, Ford had issues with the with them taking over, putting them in receivership or whatever they're doing in regards to the budget and things.
Well, I don't think Ford had issue. She mentioned on the
Ford
air
had
that
issues.
She mentioned on the air that the Richard, you correct me if I'm wrong. I think she said the mayor of the county mayor bought 500-acre plots of land on both sides of Mason. And he also sits on the board, the Ford board of directors or governors. Am I right, Richard?
Yeah. Yeah,
so it's about trying to force them out, try to give up their charter. The town has been there.
I know I've heard reports about saying that Ford wasn't too happy about, you know, the way that it was going about and the way that it was addressed, because none of this came into play until Ford made the donation or they made it to where they was going to build whatever they was going to build. But, I mean, to go from having $1 million in debt over a certain period of time to wiggle it down to $250,000 in debt, that shows financial responsibility, I mean, to me. So I don't understand what they're really trying to do by taking over the charter and all of that stuff, other than having control of the money. And I mean, it's just real interesting. Now, the last thing is this. What's really interesting is, if the truth be told, is that you don't, from my understanding, I don't even think that the NAACP or any of these so-called other, you know, so-called black activist groups are coming in and supporting them, you know, with attorneys and things like that to fight what's being done to them, because it's not fair what's being done to them, because, like I said, you go from $1 million debt down to $250,000 debt in a certain amount of time. That's financial responsibility, if you ask me. So, you know, it's definitely an interesting case.
Yeah, so I must stay in touch with them so they can give us an update. I think she said on the 16th or 15th, the case. Say that, Richard.
15th.
Yeah, the case.
The 15th. Yeah.
The case comes up to court, so I'll get them to come back on.
Because once they make the ruling, I don't know if they got things in place that if it's not the right ruling, to appeal it and things of that nature. Because this is one of those classic examples of how all these Negroes talk about the Democratic Party and this and that, where the people in the Democratic Party is supposed to have people in place to fight this. I mean, I just don't understand it. But, you know, I guess, you know, they done gave black black people this
and see that,
this
but
what's called a black woman on the court, so they're happy now.
Well, listen, before we wind things down, let me say this. And see, you know, I agree with Reverend Pinckney wholeheartedly when he was talking about critical thinking. See, this is, if you remember when we were talking about the three people that was potential candidates, and Richard, you can echo this. When we were talking about three people that was potential candidates at the time, they whittled it down to the woman that just went in, Ketanji Jackson, that one of the main things that they ought to be, that black folks ought to be talking about is that 14th Amendment and whether they have the right as so-called citizens of this country, because black folks feel as though that they're citizens, but white folks do not feel as though that black folks are full citizens of this country. What they're trying to do in Mason is a direct affront to their 14th Amendment. Would you agree, Richard?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you got a town that has a charter that's, what I think she said, 130 years old.
50.
So, what do you, they want them to tear up their charter, give up receivership. You heard the activist say that he sat on the communion table in a black church, which is disrespectful, sat his butt, his ass on the table, and said, you can keep your address, you can keep your holiday parade, but you're going to give up that charter. I mean, that just shows you
they want to control the money.
Yeah, but I'm not even talking about the money. That shows the blatant disrespect of any, you know, like, who the hell, you know, come on, That's why when the woman stood up, when Mayor Rivers stood up and said, you ain't going to do this, and we ain't going to allow this, you know, you, wow. See, I don't care nothing about the money and what they want. I'm talking about the disrespect, and you're not talking to me like that. And when I say me, I'm talking about you're not talking to black folks like that. That's why I played that clip last week when Farrakhan was dealing with Wallace, and Wallace said some stupid crap. And Farrakhan just jumped right on him with 2 feet. So you can't let these white folks just say anything because they don't respect you anyway. And they figure you stupid or slow. Like that shenanigans that dumbass president did last week. Now, all of this stuff going on with black folks in this country, stuff that he didn't push after he lied to them, George Floyd bill, Voting Rights Act, doing something about these rogue cops. So all of a sudden, he has some type of dog and pony show that don't mean a goddamn thing. And excuse the French. He brings this woman up here, put her on the court. It ain't going to make no difference because the way the court is fashioned. And these people that's on there, these people will be on there just as long as she will. And then he brings up Obama as some type of, he don't make any legislation anymore. What was the purpose of him being there? See, it was a dog and pony show. It was a show. She was up there, Obama was up there, and Kamala Harris standing up there. What is that show for? I guess he figured the midterm.
Exactly.
Come on, we got to stop going for the show when this stuff is going on. These people are violating. You're talking about some constitution. Come on with that bullshit crap paper that they wrote. They violate these people's constitutional rights there. It's against the 14th Amendment that their so-called forefathers put in there. But when it comes to money, they don't care nothing about your rights. Roger B. Tawney said it all for white folks. You have no rights that white folks are bound to respect.
Never have and never will.
All right. Well,
well listen, man, enjoy the rest of the week, and hopefully we'll get to the point to where, as you know, we can move forward. Because I tell you, man, to watch my people be so elated and happy over this woman sitting on the court that's already been vetted and everything, to never do nothing for our best interests as a people, it's a sickening feeling, man. I mean, you know, it's like we've been here for so long and been under oppression for so long. It's like we're not waking up, man. It's like we just not getting it, man. It's like, come on. I mean, what do you expect this woman to really, really do? If you study her history, she ain't really have no track record of doing anything to be honest for black people. I mean, look at her record. She has no record of, you know, saving black people, you know what I mean, creating things. And lastly, I'll leave this to you. When she picks her clerks, it will tell a lot about who and what she is. Look and see if there's 10 black clerks. Look and see how many will be, as AKA they say, minority. Look and see how many blacks, Latino, Asian, or any other ethnic group going to be her clerks. Because from my understanding, I got to look further into it. She don't have a strong history of having minorities as her clerks, if I'm not mistaken. I gotta do a little more research on it. But little bits that I've heard about her, she don't have a strong track record. And that says a lot. Because I'm a firm believer, the way things go in this country, if you got 10 clerks, I'm not gonna be happy unless I got 4 seats as a black man. Now, hey, listen, that 2, 3, 1, I ain't going for it. If it ain't 4 black people on it, I don't care. It may have 4, 1, and 1 or some other ethnic group and 4 whites. I can live with that. But if it's anything less than 4 and you black, I can't roll with it, man. You know what I mean? I'm just being frank with you about it. You deserve at least 40%, man. But hey, we'll see. But hotel, and as always, man, put me on hold to the end of the show and enjoy your weeks.
Thanks for your contribution. 602. Hey, listen, Brother Marcus.
Yes, brother.
I want to thank you for putting us in touch with Vice Mayor Rivers and Brother Harris. It was an interesting discussion that they had, letting the people know what was going on down there.
Very, very interesting. Maybe one strategy we can use if they act a fool is boycott Ford. That's it, because black people like buy Ford cars. Just stop buying Ford cars. Hit them in the pocket,
Yeah, so that is something, and that's a great idea. That's something actually that can be done.
Hit them in the pocket, yeah. The mayor is on the board of trustees. That's a conflict of interest right there, That's a conflict of interest. But hit Ford in the pocket. That's all, Stop buying Ford cars. Go buy a Japanese car, something like that, Anyway, that's just my little contribution. Thank you.
Thanks for your contribution, brother. Before we leave tonight, I want to give the lineup on Time for an Awakening Media, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, African Perspectives with Brother Hoshi, always interesting topics and dialogues on African Perspectives. That's Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Later on Monday evenings, Black Therapy Central with host Dr. Maria Kamban and Dr. Kamal Kamban. That's 8 to 9. From 9 to 10, the first and third Mondays of the month, Conversation Reparations, that's in Cobra's program, with host on Tuesday, I'm sorry, on Tuesday, 8 to 10, Black Reality Think Tank, 8 to 10 p.m. on Tuesday, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers on Wednesday. It's Our Time, the Black Farmers program from 8 to 9. And Black Agenda Report from 9 to 10 with host Dr. David Muhammad. On Friday, Time for an Awakening is back from 8 until, and on Saturdays from 7 to 9, the Elders of Sankofa from 7 to 9. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be to play. Such a small part of.
To save the children.